driving by this brand new mission. Liked his plans, but they came undone when it got around to God and guns. I don't know how he grew up, but it sure wasn't down at the hunting club. Cause if it was, he'd understand just a little bit more about the working man. God and guns keep us strong. That's what this country was founded on. Well, we might as well give up and run if we let them take our
This is Soldiers of Patriotism.
Good afternoon, sisters and brothers of freedom. I salute you. I salute all of you because it's not just today. Actually, we are here to celebrate Veterans Day, and I'm going to say something about that in a second. But I want to celebrate you all too. Because you all have and had a very important influence on my life and on our country. And I'm here to tell you that keep it up, because if you stop, then we will die. I wanted to read something here. It's just a Veterans Day prayer, because today is Veterans Day. And it's, Eternal and loving God, we are so thankful for the men and women that you have raised up to serve our country with honor, dignity, commitment in the past and present, in wartime and times of peace, in combat or on the home front. We remember them today as they have served with honor, dignity, courage, and commitment. We ask you to bless them in the sacrifices they have made to give of themselves for the cause of freedom. We ask you to surround them and their families with your love and protection as many continue to serve on the front lines. In their times of loneliness and despair, we ask you to be their unseen hand that will lift them up to see a brighter day. We remember those that have lost their lives in service, and we applaud their selfless acts as well as their families that released them to serve. As you have blessed this nation as the land of the free and the home of the brave, we extend this blessing to every branch of our military and ask that your continued strength and power be with us in the days ahead. We thank you that their service has not been in vain, dear Lord, and we salute you with honor today and every day, believing that you are willing and able to hear and answer. We ask in Jesus' name, amen. Rick, I don't know if you guys heard me there. Michael dropped up, but
yeah, it's a shame Michael.
I got Kurt online too.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Michael said he's rebooting.
Okay, I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah.
Good Lord, man. Oh, man, I'm just...
Welcome back, brother. Hey, man, it's just another day in paradise, right? You know?
Yeah.
See, what I always do is I call up that British chick on Skype, and I go, she goes like, hello, how are you, Daddy? I'm like, oh, I want a party with the invite, you know? You know, get it all, baby, you know? You know? But well, she don't ever talk back to me. She just says, hey, you know, test your mic. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, come on.
So did I
get me better, you know? I know I'm acting crazy, man. It's been 3 weeks since I've been without a cigarette, and I'm digging it. I really am. I'm you know, just over it, I think. Maybe another week, and I'll be totally over it. But
yeah, I can imagine being.
Well, did our intro song play?
Yes,
yeah,
it
intro,
did.
Yeah, oh. The intro did.
All right.
I don't know what I did, but oh well.
All right. Well, here we are, folks. Sunday. Hey, guys, you know what? Since our show on Wednesday, I've been thinking about a lot of things, and I just want to throw them out there to kind of get the topographical situation going. Some things I think that we're probably going to have to look forward towards doing over the next couple of years, certainly over the next 4 years, and I want to get y'all's input on them. We got Kurt on here, and Rick, and Bing, and 718-305-7176. Anyone else that wants to join us, call us in, because I've got some ideas. Look, I don't think anybody can say that our fiscal resolve and our fiscal issues are better than the Democrats. So we have to ask ourselves, why did we lose Tuesday? Well, we know that we had fewer votes than voted for McCain in 08, which tells me a lot of people just unfortunately sat it out. They weren't pleased with whom the party brokers foisted upon us. Now, that's a given. We can bitch and moan about that all day long. It's not going to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
But what are we going to do about getting people in the middle that voted for Obama that we're going to have to get? I think we have to change our message. Now, that said, let me stipulate, I'm not saying that we have to compromise on our principles, but we've got to change our message, and we've got to figure out which things should be handled at the federal government and which things don't need to be or shouldn't be. I'm going to throw out there a couple of things that need to be handled at the state level, and one thing that we do need to seriously talk about, and we need to come up with a solution. I don't know what the answer is, but we're going to have to come up with one as a party, and that's immigration. So I'm going to start with a couple of social issues that I think are creaming our butts that we really just need to stay the heck away from. We don't need to compromise, but we need to approach the way we discuss them in a different manner, especially our nominee. First of all, that being abortion. I'm pro-life, and I'm not going to compromise on that. But I also don't – my problem with Roe v. Wade is that Roe v. Wade was cut from whole cloth, a right at the federal level that really belongs at the state level. We need to have this fight for abortion at the state level. This doesn't need to be in Washington, D.C. I don't – And we need a candidate who says, look, I'm pro-life, but we're not going to be handling this from the Oval Office. Roe v. Wade was wrong, not because I believe not because I'm a pro-life candidate. Roe v. Wade is wrong because it gave a right at the federal level that does not exist. It is a fight that has to be handled at the 50 individual state levels. That's number one. Number two, this marriage malaise. This is a smoke and mirrors issue Look, I am pro marriage. I believe that marriage is a right. That's capital R-I-T-E, right, not a right, small R-I-A or R-I-G-H-T. This issue, I think we're going to have to start looking at from the angle of, okay, this is probably going to happen. Let's just be honest, guys. It's probably going to happen. But I don't want the union of two people of the same sex to be calling it a marriage. I believe that that is a religious rite that's performed and blessed by the church. Therefore, I propose that we need to start, and this is a twofold thing here because it also includes DOMA. We need this issue of same-sex marriage, in quotes, needs to be handled at the county level where the certificates are issued. And perhaps the government just doesn't need to be in the business of recognizing anybody's marriage. And that certificate simply needs to say civil union on it and leave it to the churches to bless it as a quote-unquote marriage. That said, DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, we're small government people. I want us to think about this logically for a minute. We're small government people. We always have been. Is the Defense of Marriage Act something that needs to be fought in Washington? I'm just throwing that out there. I'm throwing that out there for us to discuss.
And well, what gets me about this whole thing, Michael, is that we got Sandra Flock and all that up there and said that they want their contraceptions, but see, and so on. But in the meantime, they want their abortion, and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's contradictory, and we don't call them out. We have never called them out. We don't call them out today. We still don't call them out on things that they
say. You're absolutely right, Bing. You're absolutely right, and I don't.
And we need to start getting up in their face and start pointing that finger and getting that head and getting those hips going and saying, baby, you ain't sitting there dictating to me what I will do with my life, or you ain't sitting there and going to, you know, tell me that. You know, I don't know. I just don't get it. I'm just saying that these people need to understand that I don't know. Maybe, you know, on the job training for a liberal, what is that? I don't know how we.
I don't disagree with you, but where do we want to have that fight, brother? Do we want to have that fight in Washington or at the state level where it belongs?
I say at the state level.
State level, for sure.
I'm saying, and I don't disagree with you. Trust me, I don't. You know I'm pro-life, and you know that I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. But I will say, right now, right here, I've always maintained that this whole issue of same-sex marriage, my argument is that it's a right, a sacrificial right of the church. It's not a right, R-I-G-H-T, of the government to be saying who can and cannot be married. If the government wants to issue civil union certificates that recognizes two people or have legally bound themselves where they can enjoy being able to go to the hospital or whatever the arguments are, the government then that needs to be a civil union certificate for everybody. I don't want the government saying that my wife and I are married. My church did that. So I think if we take this argument, and I'm just throwing this out there for discussion. If we make the playing field level where everybody is civilly joined as far as the county, where you go to the county courthouse and get your civil union certificate, then where is the argument from the left that we think we're not giving someone else something that they think they deserve? If under the eyes of the law we're all joined civilly and we allow, because isn't the marriage really about what our church blesses? It's not about what the government blesses. It's about
it should be what the state blesses. I mean, if you want to go out there and marry a goat and that's legal in your state, then look, all the goat people can go to California, wherever they want to go. I mean, it that should be up to the state. It should not be a federal mandate. In my opinion. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. It should be
because where do we draw the line? Whether whether it be same sex, whether it be marrying a goat, whether it be marrying your daughter, whether it be marrying your son, where do we draw the line?
Well, apparently there's those on the other side that haven't thought it through. See, you got to remember, we're all thinkers, Bing. We think things through. You know, my whole issue with redefining the term of marriage is that, okay, if we're going to redefine it as anything other than being between one man and one woman, well, then we're setting ourselves up for someone to come along and say, but I want to be married to three women, or I want to be married to five men, whatever the case may be. As far as animals and stuff, then you're getting into stuff where you can't logically say that the party you're marrying, if I want to marry my dog, that dog has no say in whether it wants to or not. So we have to keep it on the level of talking about humans. So I understand that by redefining the terms of marriage, as anything other than between a man and a woman, that we're opening it up to allow a whole lot of stuff that we may not like. My only thing is maybe the answer for us is, because I seriously, wholeheartedly believe my church ordained my marriage. I believe in marriage as a religious rite, a sacrificial rite, a sacrament. I had to go down to the courthouse and get the marriage certificate, but therein is my argument. Maybe the county government doesn't need to be issuing marriage certificates. Therefore, the terms of marriage are not redefined. They're only sanctioning civil unions. It's up to the churches to then define what they consider a marriage or not.
But the churches are controlled by who?
By the
congregation
of that church.
No, who controls the churches, the purse strings of the churches? The whole thing is, with everything, I think, in all of these discussions that we have, is who controls the purse strings. And, you know, right now, the House of Representatives controls the purse strings of the country. And we don't have the Senate. We don't have the executive branch. So we have to go after the House. And you know, I agree with you, you know, that there's a failing. There's just a failing in mentality and so on with how we are trying to operate things. But I'm just trying to say, when the state controls what you do, they control your religion. They control your God.
Which is why they should not be in the business of blessing a quote-unquote marriage. You know, the whole purpose, what is the purpose?
Of course, but they are. They are, you know, and that's the whole thing. They are right now. They have been for years. So we have to figure out how to get around this.
We take marriage out of the equation. We take it out of the argument. Take the word marriage. I think what we're all upset about is they want to redefine the term of something that we believe has religious value to it. Am I wrong or right?
Yeah, I think you're right. But Michael, at the same time, the 10th Amendment says that the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited to it by the states.
Absolutely.
Or reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. So now, what you're saying, though, and forgive me for just asking this, but I mean, based on what you're saying now, do you think that, or no, I feel that it should be reserved to the state or the people?
Well, yeah,
you know,
and I do feel that this both of these issues, abortion and marriage, are at a level that in which they should not be.
Yeah,
I'm trying to prioritize. Look, I don't know that what I'm thinking is the right way or not, guys. What I'm thinking about is my number one priority is fiscal conservatism. Yes, social conservatism is important to me, but none of that's going to make a damn bit of difference if we become a socialist country. None of that's going to matter when we've lost to the point that we cannot – I mean, we had more people vote for an entitlement society. Look, these people have finally figured out that they can vote themselves government largesse.
Yeah,
you're right about that.
So we have to prioritize. Where are our battles? And we have to message better. I mean, that's all I'm really saying. I don't know that what I'm saying is the right answer or not. I'm trying to think this through. Is that the battle that we really want to have, or do we want to maintain a free society where capitalism and the opportunity to make money and keep that money is priority number one? I mean, if we want to fight social issues, then fine, we're going to fight them. But my fear is that in that fight, we're going to lose the country.
You're right. I mean, how did we win the Congress in 94? How did we win the House in 2010? It was because of the budget and fiscal conservatism. You know, so if we just focus on them, you know, put the social issues to the background, and let's just focus on the fiscal, because, I mean, without the fiscal, there is no social.
Well, and I'm not necessarily saying, Rick, that we put the social issues in the background. I'm saying let's put the onus back on the left by saying, look, these are issues that must be fought at the state level, not the federal. We keep letting – it's like Mr. Akin. God bless him. Look, I agree with what he said, except for that he didn't say it correctly, and unfortunately Richard Murdoch was a casualty of that.
I thought he said everything correctly. Everybody sits here
we thought he said
that
everything.
With me back then.
Yeah,
huh?
We thought he said it correctly because we
agreed with
him.
Yeah, we thought that everybody else thinks. I'm a freaking nut because I believed in what he said. I thought what he was saying, what he was trying to say, was the truth. But you got the left that sits there and just, you know, I mean, crap runs out of them like a duck's butt, you know, and they don't call them on it. You know, we are not going to get anywhere unless we get people, the mentality of the country to change. I don't care if you're talking about fiscal. I don't care if you're talking about social. I don't care if you're talking about, extraterrestrial rights. I mean, I don't care what you're talking about. The mood of the country has to change until we get it back.
But it's not, brother. It's not. That's the problem. This country
has moved center left.
The country, I'm afraid, has moved center left. We've got to repackage our social message, and we've got to put it down at the state level and not have – this is just my thinking, okay? I could be wrong.
But if we keep having
these battles at the federal level where they don't even belong to begin with, then we're and then on top of that, if we come across looking like we're wearing tinfoil hats, we're going to lose the country. We're simply going to lose it.
Okay, Michael, let's put it back in this court. Who has, like I said, who has the purse strings right now? Who do we – the only – aspect of government that we can't control right now? The House.
We can, but we lost ground there too.
We're going to give that up. But we have to get these people, we have to send them some golf balls or something because they don't have it right now. John Bonner, I'm sorry, should never have been put in that position. He's not fit for it. We need somebody out there to lead. They keep coming up with these. You know, look, why don't we do this? Come up with what a novel idea, really. Come up with putting everything, the taxation, everything back to pre-19 or even 1990 level, okay? And say, look, this is what we're going to do. We're not really going to get rid of anything, but we're just going to put it back to where you were before you got in office, Mr. Obama. Okay, and we're going to go, sit there and let the Bush tax cuts expire. And if you don't like it, then then tell us what to do. Because, see, on the other side, in the Senate, they could sit there and say, well, they let the Bush tax cuts expire. Do you think that they're going to sit there and implement them again? No, they won't.
Well, here's
these people are playing games with us.
They are. And look, Corker the Porker was on Chris Wallace this morning. He's already talking about we're going to have to raise taxes. You know, there's folks, we all know, look, again, I say we're thinkers. We think things through. But elections have consequences. And there's a lot to be learned from the loss that we lost. We lost seats in the Senate. We lost seats in the House. And we did not get the White House. It's a whole variety of reasons. You had single women that were voting on their women's rights issues, which are abortion and government paid for contraceptive. You had all of the union bastards who voted for this man because he quote unquote saved the auto industry, except for Delphi, they got it up the ass. You had all of the minorities and poor whites that voted for the assistance that they're already receiving, and then couple that with a conservative base that showed up in lesser numbers than they showed up in 08 because they weren't satisfied with the candidate who didn't take the battle to Obama, didn't press him on, say, Benghazi, for instance. And then you had Tea Party candidates who, I love Brother Aiken and I love Brother Murdoch, and I agree with what they said. I'm not saying that I disagree with them. I agree with what they said. The problem is that we're apparently the minority, and a good chunk of people, it scared the hell out of them, and it translated on to Brother Mitt. I'm just saying we've got to find a way to retool our message. It's not working.
Yeah, Bain. My name's Bain. Bain is evil. I mean, you know, that's the message that the media was trying to get out. You know, I mean, but the thing is that we didn't have a candidate there. Herman Cain could have kicked Obama's butt any day.
And I think he could have, but what would he have been fighting on, brother? I know you know the answer to this. You and I were both on Team Cain. We would have won it because of fiscal issues. He would have stayed away from all of the social issues.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. That gets back to your point. I mean, why are we sitting there dwelling on the social issues? The social issues do not create jobs. They do not get the country back on track. You know, they might make us feel, you know, morally responsible or whatever. But the thing is that it's a feel-good. Look, liberals argue and they'll try to dictate to you based on emotion. They don't dictate to you on fact. Everything they did in this election was based on emotion. It was not based on fact.
Absolutely.
Fact.
Absolutely.
So we need to go back to the fact.
And his president, and this president had a very good ground game. And though you and I agree it shouldn't be about social issues, he made it about social issues to the various little segments. That's what they do. They compartmentalize, and it's not a macro picture. It's a micro picture, and they have all these little groups with all these little special interests that really don't. A lot of them don't really care about the. If you convince women, for I'm just going to use this for an example. If you convince women that Mitt Romney is going to take away their right to murder babies, well, then you're going to lose a lot of votes. Now, I understand we can't compromise on that because we're going to lose even more conservative votes than we didn't get this time around. So, I mean, I understand all that. It's a very complex situation that we're in here. And you're right.
I say we focus on key conservative issues. I say we focus on those. We have to, because that's where our focus is. That's where our expertise is. That's where we lie. That's where we sleep at night. That's where we get up in the morning. That's where we put our pants on and saying, you know, women and men equally. We're getting distracted by, I think, in my opinion, by going off on who gets contraception. Look, I really don't care. If you're gay and you want to get married or whatever, I don't have a problem with that, okay? Just stay away from me, whatever. I don't care to hang around. I don't participate with certain people, okay? There's certain people I do, there's certain people I don't. And those are the kind of people, I don't hate them or nothing. I just don't hang out with them. I don't party with them. I don't, you know, do anything with them. You know, but there's people at my work that are getting laid off, 30% of the workforce this week.
Well, you know, we've got...
So you tell me, and this is not just in one place. This is all over the place. You look at the stock market down. The stock market was 5% down when Obama got elected, 5% down when he got reelected. And you look at the layoffs. These people ain't stupid. The business owners are not stupid. And I wish if we have some business owners on here, I'd really love for you guys to call in and just say, what is cash king? Is that what it is right now? Because I think that's what it is. Cash is king, and they are conserving cash because
they are
waiting 4 years.
We've already got Papa John's that's going to scale back on hours to get around Obamacare. McDonald's and the group of people that own Red Lobster and all of the affiliated restaurants, they're tinkering around with it. Folks, consequences have elections. And for those that voted for Ron Paul or Gary Johnson just sat out the election – they're just as much to blame as those that voted for this idiot. And so here's some of the things that we can look forward to in the next 4 years. A carbon tax. We can look forward to a carbon tax just by the virtue of being frickin' born. We can look forward to a carbon tax. We can look forward to – we already know that our side's going to start wavering on taxes. Right now they're saying – For the middle class, you know, Obama's spouting this isn't going to be for the middle class, just to the top 1% or whatever that's supposed to mean. But then I hear another Democratic congressman this morning talking about the deficiency between paying 15% capital gains and whatever that number is. You know, again, this goes back to the Laffer curve. At what point are we overtaxed? But so now when the $1 I earn and pay taxes on and that I want to invest, which I do, I invest money in the stock market. I like to play around with stocks, not only because I like to gamble, but because I'm hoping to make money. And so I take a risk, let's say, with American Airlines, who's sinking right now. But I have faith they're going to pull it out. So I'm buying all the freaking stock I can at 36 cents a share. If I make the money that I hope that I make in 5 years, and this president has his way, it won't be just the 15%, which I don't believe I should have to pay anyway. It'll probably be taxed at, 30, 39%, whatever they decide the income tax is going to be. And they're going to start looking at it as an income tax, plus all of the 21 taxes that we're going to have thrown on our ass from Obamacare. I mean, it just doesn't end. Elections have consequences. And being – and Rick, and we need to get some other callers in here. I think I might have either stirred a hornet's nest up or I don't know. We'll find out in just a second. But here's the problem. Once all of these things happen and people get comfortable, it's like Obamacare. Our chance to get rid of Obamacare was this cycle. I'm afraid that 4 years from now it's going to be five times as hard to get rid of. Because once people become used to something, it's harder to get rid of it.
Once they get that entitlement, and actually, Michael, I'm working on a song, man. I hope this thing goes viral. But anyways, Melissa said she scrolled out there. But anyways, Melissa says something like that, you know, that social issues don't have to be your major platform, but you have to be principled on. And, yeah, I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying that right now we've got worse problems than
much bigger fish to fry.
Okay, but we have a mentality problem. We've got a mentality problem in this country. Now, okay, I'm going to be like Bill Whittle. I'm just going to sit there and say, you know, I'm not going to blame anybody for what happened, okay? But I'm going to, you know, and I'm not going to bring up anything, but what the deal is that we've got some stupid people out there. We've got stupid people out there. And, you know, it's not the majority. There's no mandate. It's just 50% of the people out there basically are stupid. Now, whether you want to sit there and say, well, you know, there's voter fraud or whatever, you all can get into that. I'm kind of done with that. I'm not going to look at that. But the thing is that we got stupid people out there. They should not even be voting in the first place because they don't even know how to balance a checkbook. They don't know how to, you know, they don't know basic things in life. I don't think they should be voting. And that's a
right
issue too. But as far as look. I'm a compassionate conservative. I, you know, think that, you know, we do need to help our fellow Americans out. But the problem is that if you are sitting there and just begging for it and you don't want to help yourself, I don't think you should get any of my help. I really don't.
No.
If you're willing to work for it or if you're willing to say at least thank you, give me a kiss or whatever, you know, then I'll help you out. But other than that, I just don't think you deserve my help.
Yeah.
You know, there's 90% of the people in this country, really. I don't know about 90%, but, you know, there's a lot of people in this country. I would not cross the road to shake their hand because it just ain't worth my time. Because I know who they are. I can see who they are. You know, it's kind of like Roddy Piper in that one movie where he had the goggles and he could see all these aliens and stuff like that flying around. I mean, I can see these people. I know who they are. They're the dregs of society, and they just keep pulling us down. And I don't know how you get around that. It's a mentality. It's a whole issue. It's this whole mindset. I don't know how you get around it.
Well, let me just give y'all a quote here real quick, and then let's pull in some other folks and get them in here. And I don't know how to pronounce this guy's last name. It's French name. It's Alex de Tocqueville.
Alexis de Tocqueville.
Yeah. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidate promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the results that a democracy will always collapse over loose fiscal policy. I think that's what we saw. And look, I'm like you, Bing. I'm not going to go down this voter fraud thing. We lost. The man won fair and square. He had more voters than we had. And I put a large amount of onus on our side that sat this election out. And that's a problem with our side. We're I'm speaking of the collective we on our side. If we don't like what's happening, we take our marbles and go home. We simply can't do that. If we continue down this road like we did in 08 and again in 2012, we're going to lose this country because enough of us decided to sit our butts at home and sulk and crawl up in a fetal position and cry over spilt milk that the man that we've had. Look, we all agree that this man was foisted upon us. He wasn't who we wanted to be our nominee, but it was the cards that we were dealt, and he's a far cry better than what we've got.
I was going to say, Michael, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm not blaming it on Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney seems just like, you know, a nice guy. I mean, I like to hang out with the dude, you know. I don't know what I do with him other than play golf. But the thing is that, and I don't even play golf. I might shoot his golf balls in the air. But the thing is that we, like you said, we keep getting this GOP mentality that they think they can't win an election with a conservative. And we've got these liberal pundits out there now all over. And guess what they're pushing? Amnesty. That's basically what they're pushing. They're saying, well, look, yeah, conservatives just can't win an election because they didn't get the Hispanic vote, you know. And they keep telling it, and it's gay. That's all I've been hearing. I'm like, wait a minute. We won in Texas with Ted Cruz. What's wrong with Ted Cruz's last name? You know? I mean, what's wrong with Texas? I mean, they're a border state, and we nominated Ted Cruz. What the heck was that?
But we also
somebody
got
just beat somebody?
You're right. We did get Ted. In Texas, that's not a strange thing. But even here in Texas, we have our areas. And look, I agree with you. immigration is not the main reason that the Hispanics voted for Democrats. By and large, they voted their pocketbooks just like everybody else. They voted for Obama, they voted for more government assistance. But immigration play a part.
Wait a minute, though. Good Cubans, I consider Latinos. I mean, they voted.
Well, and it doesn't exactly. It doesn't include Romney. All the.
So it doesn't include all of them. We have to, I think distinguish. I think between some of these people, and not these people. I don't want to get into this Dan Quayle thing or whatever it was. But I understand what you're trying to say, Michael, but. The thing is that I think that it boils down to nuts and bolts, man. If we don't have a candidate out there that's got some spark, that's got some fire, that's got some brimstone, that's got some kind of basic political experience and some history, then we're not going to go anywhere.
Let me give you an example. District 20 down in the Bejar County area. Okay, there was a good man that I was supporting down there by the name of David Rosa. A Mexican-American, well, actually an American of Mexican descent, okay, Texan of Mexican descent, who lost to another Texan of Mexican descent, a fellow by the name of Joe Quinn Castro. Now, David has strong fiscal, social conservative values, just like us. Why then did the majority of the folks, which is the majority of which in San Antonio are Hispanic, vote for a socialist? It wasn't all because of immigration. I'm sure that part of that had something to do with it, but it was mostly because of what the government has to give them.
Yeah, but what the liberals are doing now is they're pushing for amnesty because that creates more people to vote for them. And that's what this whole narrative is now, is that they're trying to say, look, who are the liberals to sit there and dictate to anybody else who or why are they electing a lesbian or whatever? But they're trying to do that. They're saying, oh, look, the conservatives, they're just way out of touch. You know, they just don't understand the Hispanic community like we do. Well, wait a minute. Let's put this in perspective. Okay, the Democrats got, 90-some percent of the black vote in the racial vote, I guess, or interracial vote, but they didn't get the white vote. Romney got the white vote. So are they trying to tell me that I'm a racist, or are they a racist? Because they're not they're trying to tell me that I need to go after the Hispanic vote because I'm a Republican, which I'm not. I'm an independent. But I'm a Republican, but then on the same hand, they didn't get the white vote. So why don't we start saying, look, you guys should go after the white vote. You just really don't understand white people. No, because see why? Because we're called racists, right? It's an easy word. All I got to say is racist, and it's over.
Oh,
true.
Let's bring some other people in here, and then we'll get into the immigration thing here in a little bit. But we got some folks waiting here, Brother Bing. It looks like we might even have a liberal on the line, but I want to get a couple of folks that have been waiting a little bit longer than liberal 141. So hang tight, because I really want to take your phone call. But let's go ahead and bring Brother Kurt in here, and then Chuck, you're on deck. Go ahead, Kurt.
Hey, Michael, no, you know what? If we've got a liberal out there that's got something he wants to say, why don't you let him on in here so he can get it said and we can get this out of our way? How
okay.
about that?
We'll do that, and I'm going to encourage him to stay with us, and I know that all of us, as we've always done and will always do, will be respectful and courteous to this gentleman, because that's the kind of, or female, I don't know which it is yet, but that's just the kind of folks that we are. So let's go ahead and bring this person in here. Liberal 141.
Hello, my name is Stanley. I'm from New York. How are you?
I'm sorry, say your name again.
You?
Stanley, all the way from New York. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing not bad. I'm here with you. The reason you lost the election, and that's one thing that I think a lot of people, it's because, and you could go to stats, because 80% of people in America could not relate what Romney was as a person. That was a stat that even conservatives, if you go to Fox News and print news, they said they couldn't relate to him. And I'm sorry, that was not your strongest leader you had as a leader to make, to go against Obama to say, hey, okay, let's book a stand.
Hey, I'm sorry. Well, can you hang on 1 second? We've got a very bad. Are you on a speakerphone?
Are you on like an Obama phone? Oh, I thought you were on an Obama phone at first.
No, we really want to hear what you have to say. It's just
let
hard
me
to get it.
I'm going to call.
Okay, I think he's going to call back from another line. As soon as he gets back in, we'll get him back on pronto. Kurt, go ahead.
Well, Michael, I got to be real honest with you, brother. Ever since Wednesday morning or Tuesday night when I saw the results, the way this was going, I didn't ever exactly experience a meltdown. I came real close to it, but I've been trying to keep control of my emotions, I guess you'd say. I'm trying to think logically, trying to stay in control and think constructively. And I spent a good chunk of yesterday with a group of people in a meeting, and I'm just going to let it go with that. But I'm going to tell you about that meeting. I probably had less to say during that than I've ever had to say during a meeting of this type. What I was doing, I was looking and listening at the people there. I wanted to see how they were feeling and what they were thinking. And here's what I came away with. I saw a group of people who were, they weren't defeated. They were a little bit quieter than usual. The word introspective came to my mind. They were a group of people who were thinking, I would say just they're thinking as hard as they can. Their brains are working at this, and it's kind of hard to work at this under the set of circumstances under which we are now, because we don't know what's coming. But I came away, I felt proud of that group of people because everyone was calm, and they're just working. They take a particular issue and they would dissect it very carefully, very methodically, looking for what can we work with here, what can we make out of this, what can we do with it to turn something that looks like a negative right now into a positive later on. In other words, they were a little think tank. I would not be remiss in naming it that. And under those circumstances, this is 4 days out from the defeat that we suffered in this election, that group of people was able to mentally operate in that mode, that capacity. It made me feel good because, in my opinion, someone said it in chat on Tradam last night, I think it was Boyd, the Alaskan, said, hey, we normally need at least 10 days to mourn something of a drastic nature, whatever it is. We need at least 10 days before you can start to come out of it. And I know that's where I am. I'm still in mourning. I don't know what's going to happen next, but all I know is that I have to keep going. And I have used this statement. I don't mean to try to sound noble, or, you know, I'm not at the Alamo in Texas, Michael. But I made the statement more than once that I'll prefer to die on my feet rather than to live on my knees.
Yeah.
And that's the approach that I take to this entire thing. We don't know, here in Tennessee, I'm going to go back to my favorite guy again here for just a second. By the 16th of November, Bill Haslam has to make a decision on whether he's going to put his signature on the paperwork for the state of Tennessee to opt out of Obamacare or not. If he will quietly agree to let Tennessee opt out of it, we've got that's a win for us there, and we can move forward. If he doesn't, then I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what we're going to do. But, again, you know, Haslam and his situation up there in Nashville is my number one target right now. We have to focus on the state of Tennessee, and I think every other state needs to do the same thing. We got to think 10th Amendment here, folks. Some brief mentions have been made already earlier on here about our 10th Amendment and what, you know, we know what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights says. So, that was my fault there. I had the sound up on my computer. Sorry about that.
Kurt, would you kind of describe the mood down there as not somber, but just people are like in their survival mode? Because that's what I'm at. I mean, even more than what I was, but I mean, like survival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Survival mode is a. Yeah, that's an applicable terminology here. For, I would say all of us around here feel that way, except the people that don't have a clue yet what's coming. Everybody that's got a clue is thinking that way. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, that's pretty much a given, I think.
Well, hey, Kurt, Brother Kurt, hang one tight. Not that what you have to say is not important, because it is very important, and we do need to discuss it, but we've got Stanley back on from New York.
Okay,
and
yes,
I want to get him in here. And the reason I want to get Stanley in here for all of us, and then we'll bring in Chuck and Boyd and bring Kurt back on and whatnot, is because I think we can maybe we can learn something from Stanley. Let's find out what kind of gentleman he is. Stanley, when I bring you back on, I'm going to let you tell us what you were going to start to tell us. I'm sorry that we were having a bad connection earlier. But then I do have some questions for you as well, Stanley. And I'm going to be respectful of you and the decision that you made to vote for President Obama. I understand that he won fair and square. We understand and we appreciate that you called in today and that you believe the way you believe, and we're going to be respectful of that. So, Stanley, with that, go ahead. What were you trying to tell us why we lost? Stanley, you there?
Not working.
Area code 438. I really would like to talk to this guy. I really would.
I show him live.
Hello,
so
sir.
I don't know.
Hello. Oh.
Are you there, sir? Stanley?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you much better now. Stanley, did you hear anything I said before I brought you on?
Okay, no problem. Like I said, the thing is, why I think Romney lost is because, like I said, there was people that we couldn't relate to him. He wasn't your best candidate, in my eyes, that you could have had to go against Obama. Maybe I think in my eyes Ron Paul would have been a good candidate. I think in my eyes Herman Cain would have been a good candidate. In my eyes, those two people would have been a lot more better candidate, and it would be a very interesting thing, because Ron Paul would have said the truth about many things that I do believe that he said. He would have said the truth about he is much more knowledgeable than he had a better way to say things to people that they could relate, and telling them this is what's going to happen with the fiscal thing, this is what we need to change the federal thing, this and that, and a lot of young people, I'm telling you, would have respected what he said, and that didn't happen. I'm telling you that. Second of all, Herman Cain, as a black conservative, would have been a better candidate because he would have made it more relatable of some stuff that he needed to say. He had a plan that he'd say, look, this is the numbers, this is how it is, this is it. Romney was all over the place. We asked him three times the question, how are you going to get $5.7 trillion? I don't know. oh, I'm going to get it through a plan. Instead of being specific and saying, here's my plan, here's what I'm going to do, here comes the calculation, let me explain to you, this is what I'm going to do, this. We out ask him this, and we were waiting for him to be presidential about that and act like, this is what I believe in. This is it. And don't lie about things, especially in 2012. If you're going to say things, young people like me, we're going to find out in 2 seconds if you lie.
Stanley,
Stanley, can I ask you a question real quick? Right quick, as we say up here in Tennessee. What has Obama done for you?
Well, Obama, at least, Obama did what he believed is best for the country. He was the only president, and it's been a long time, that did something with health care. And now no Republican, president.
Wait a minute. What has he done for you? What has he done for you?
There's many things done for me. First of all, he killed Bin Laden. That was supposed to be something that he should have done.
Stanley, hang on, guys.
Hold on. Let's not step on Stanley. He's entitled to believe what he wants.
I'm just asking the question.
Okay, fine. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Put all of us on mute except for Stanley. Thank you.
Me and Bing are going to hang with Stanley for just a minute. But I do want to, Stanley, if you're available, I do want my other guests to be able to speak with you. Stanley,
no problem. I'm here.
You said something very interesting, and I'm very intrigued by your phone call, and I want to thank you for calling in. Want you to understand that there's high emotions on our side right now, but what I hear you saying is you're not the first person that voted for Obama that I've heard saying this. I listen to talk radio all day long, and I've heard folks from the other side say basically the same thing you're saying. Brother Bean can ask you what Obama's done for you, and that's great, and I'd like to know what your answer is. I'm not really all that concerned about what Obama's done for you. Stanley, what I'm wondering is you said what I really find striking and interesting is that you rattled off two names that are much more conservative than Mitt Romney. And that was Ron Paul and Herman Cain. Now you're singing to the choir, about Herman Cain here, okay? We're all originally state leaders for the most part, for the Cain train. This is the juxtaposition I hear from you, and it's confusing to me. Would you agree that over the last 4 years, and I'm not saying that Obama's wrong, right, or indifferent or anything. Let's just go through some facts one by one. Would you say that some of his policy over the last 4 years has done anything to help the economy or hurt the economy?
I think that the last 4 years, Obama didn't concentrate himself on the job thing. I think he concentrated too much on trying to resolve an issue that he think that it was very dear to his heart, which was the healthcare issue.
He didn't want to
concentrate on the job thing, so he thought also that the best way to resolve something of the job thing said, I need to concentrate on healthcare and I need to get back I don't want to lose the car GM and things like that, so let me invest on that and do something with that also, because he wanted to concentrate. But I think his main issue was healthcare, kill the people responsible for 9/11. Save some companies for the healthcare, but he didn't go in the thing of jobs. As a black American, we have 16% unemployment and even more. So
yes.
I know he didn't do what he needed to do for the unemployment. But
okay, that's
can
a
I,
fair.
Can I?
So, so healthcare is a right granted to us by the Constitution? Just asking.
No, but healthcare is an issue that we never sit down as a nation to resolve. We all, you act
is
like,
right?
I wish, but I know maybe it's not right, but there's a huge problem with this. I wish you would come at the other side and see people as human beings and say, but let me see the problem with conservative or liberal, it goes both ways, is that we don't hear each other, and we don't put ourselves in other people's shoes.
Well,
let me ask you a question. I'm not trying to get confrontational, but, you know, you're talking condescending to me. Do you honestly think that I've never been in your shoes, that I was never poor, that I never had health care? Honestly, are you trying to tell me that? Do you think that
I've never said that you've never been poor. I'm sure you maybe have poor, and you've done what you had to do, but you forgot
You don't know me. How can you make an assumption like that? You don't know me. You don't know if I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I'm just trying to tell you that you're making an assumption about me.
I'm not making an assumption. I said both people. I didn't say just conservative. I said liberal and conservative. Don't listen to each other and don't stop doing the bickering, because this nation is divided. I'm not proud of America. We're divided now. I look at you as a different. I don't look at you. I cannot be proud. We can all not be proud as Americans. We're not American anymore. We're divided. I don't care what you say. You cannot be proud about this. And you keep on saying, oh, because those people are lazy and this and that. This is the best way you find out to put your arm down and put the other one down. And let's go back to being Americans and being proud. Yes, we could be indifferent for many things. There's some stuff we don't agree. But I'm not proud of who we are now. We're not divided. Go ahead.
America used to be individualism. It used to be rugged people that would get out there and do things, and that
America
other people
was more
would
than
sit
just
there
that.
And take care of other people.
America was more than just that. America was about also helping each other's neighbor. America was about also listening to the other person and not saying you must be stupid because you think differently. America was about opening the ideas about different people and respecting the choice of other people.
I didn't say nothing about anybody being stupid.
I'm sorry to say a lot of BTR show conservatives are all acting like the end of the world. I didn't hear one show say, you know what, we lost the election, maybe we need to learn something. I'm not saying we disagree with what we did as a liberal, but we're divided. I didn't hear one conservative show say, you know what, we're a divided nation.
Well, wait a minute. Hang on. Whoa, stop 1 second there, Stanley. Did you not hear my opening rant?
I didn't hear your opening rant.
Okay.
I didn't hear
Go back into the archives, because I think you'll be surprised by my opening rant. Are we disappointed? Yes. Look. We have a separate set of there are those in the country that want to go away of a European socialist form of government. I understand that. There's half of America that doesn't, that believes that we're willing to help our fellow man to bring them up, to get them to the point where they can help themselves. But what the left seems to continue to demonize, and I understand perception is everything, okay? I understand that. And I'm not pointing the finger at you. I'm not saying that Stanley is this way. Because quite frankly, Stanley, I think you're probably a libertarian by the way I'm hearing you talk. You sound more libertarian to me. But
I would have been very happy if Ron Paul would have done something about it. I think go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's just take the health care issue for a moment, if we can, and put it into terms that you and I can understand, okay? Because I don't know how old you are. I'm about to be a 50-year-old man. I've got three young children. I work my ass off every day. My wife works her ass off every day. We make about $100,000 a year. I'm due to have a colonoscopy and an upper GI. I was going to do it this next year because my out-of-pocket max was $4,000. But because of Obamacare, my out-of-pocket max is now $7,000. That means I've got to come up with an additional $3,000 to get my ass scoped and my esophagus scoped to make sure that I don't have cancer and get the polyps removed and to make sure that I don't have ulcerated holes in my esophagus from the acid reflux that I suffer. Now, that takes food out of my children's mouth. That takes clothes off of their back. That constitutes, based on mine and my wife's income, a 25.6 tax increase to me to help pay for people, by and large, who stand on the street and do nothing for a freaking living and have a flat-screen TV in their apartment, which is paid for by the government. And I know because I've been in these homes as a Cub Scout master in the ghetto where I took children and paid for out of my pocket their uniforms and their Cub Scout books because their mommy couldn't afford it. And I'm not bragging. I didn't mind that doing that because I've got a big heart. I'm a big-hearted person. But when do I pay enough? At what point do I pay enough to help people that refuse to help themselves, Stanley? That's all I'm saying. I hear what you're saying, and I value what you're saying, and we need to hear this as a party if we're going to change our messaging. And if you'll go back and listen to the archive, that was what my rant's about. It's about our messaging and what belongs at the federal level and what belongs at the state level. What I hear you saying is that you voted for a man who had failed four years, but if we'd have had someone like a Ron Paul or a Herman Cain, you might have voted differently. And I appreciate that and I respect it, but it confuses me, Stanley, because I see that as saying that might as well go with the status quo because our messenger wasn't as good as he should have been. Yet we continue to move further and further towards an entitlement society. Where does it end, Stanley? That's my question. Where does it end? At what point is enough enough? When do we tax the people enough, or when are we overtaxing them? I mean, if we're going to tax them at 39%, Stanley, why not just tax them at 100%? Why not just take all of the income that we earn and give it to the government?
That's what I would do if I was somebody in the Senate. I would just come out and say, when they propose their tax increase, I would say, well, wait, Mr. Reed, let's not stop at 80% or 86%. Let's just go 100%. How about that? What's the difference?
Yep.
It's the same failed argument. Wait a minute. Hear me out. I've been off. I was talking to a man about a dog. All right. Hear me out a second. No, it's the same failed argument about the minimum wage. If the minimum wage, if you Democrats and liberals cared so much about the American worker, then why would you have minimum wage at $7.45, $7.65, whatever it is now? Why would you just make it like, $30, $40, $50 an hour? Why? Because you're afraid to, because you lose money. You lose your base. People would flock away from you. They would think you were nuts. Seriously, why not make the minimum wage? Look, do you know anybody that can sit there and live on $7.50 an hour or $7.65 an hour? I don't know anybody that can, unless they live with mama or whatever. But I mean, make it $100 an hour. I mean, $20 an hour. It's a flawed argument. It fails every time.
Well, you know what, though, Bing? I think this is very instructive that Stanley called in. And again, Stanley, I want to commend you, and I thank you, because we need to hear this from your side, which I'm not even quite sure what side you're on. You've totally blown me away with the fact that you would support Ron Paul and Herman Cain. I would love to have you on my side fighting in 2 years from now. You know, maybe you can help us. Maybe you can help my side. Is it a messaging problem we have, Stanley?
I think in my eyes, it's a messaging problem and the kind of leadership that you have. I really believe that Americans, if you want to be a great leader, you got to explain this stuff properly. No, you got to explain. Ron Paul has, and I read his book, The Revolution, whatever, his last book, that he explained this thing, what is the Fed, what is happening, really properly so people could say, okay, I could relate. What is your plan and things like that? And really say to Americans, this is the facts that we're going through. This is what's going to happen and everything. And if we don't resolve that, this is going to happen. People have a problem, are losing hope. People have a problem. You're asking me the question why you want to pay more tax and things like that. I have no problem. I don't want you to pay more tax. The problem is the people that are rich, which is the 1%, I have 90% of the money here. That's where I have a problem. The people who are in the Wall Street, they have a lot of money. I looked at Forbes. Forbes said it. The 400 richest
5%
people. 5%.
No, I'm going to call you on something that's wrong. 5% of the rich people pay 65% of the income tax.
That's just the way it is. And it's probably more than that.
But how much money do they make?
I don't care what they make. It's a percent. It's a percent. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, dude. If I make $1,000 a day, okay, what difference does it make? What's 15%? What's 10%? What's 80%? I mean, are you wanting to sit there, and tell the top producers of this country that they have to pay more income tax? What do you think that they are going to do if they have to pay more out of what they earn or what they might earn?
Okay, but let's take your same example. Let's say somebody's getting $10 million a year, $10 million a month, and he has to pay 50%, like you said. He has $5 million. You think the $5 million is still poor?
Stanley, let me ask you a question.
The percentage, look, the Three Stooges made millions of dollars, okay, in movies. They died poor. They had no money. So what I'm trying to say, you're trying to think in this relative utopian world, okay?
I'm not the only utopian of this world, but there's some people that are looking at the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. The rich are not getting richer.
That might be true, you know, but there's always poor people that end up getting rich, you see. There's always poor people. Bill Gates was poor at one time, and he ended up getting rich.
Herman Cain was poor.
No. Bill Gates was never poor. Bill Gates came from a family that was a family of lawyers, and they're the one responsible that brought him to gold. He was never poor. He had a dream. He went out of Harvard, and he said, I want to do some content. Bill Gates was never poor. I read his biography. He was never poor.
Hey, guys, hang on. Time out for just a minute. There's always exceptions to the rule, but Stanley, I'll just point out one person that you just held up in high esteem that was born dirt poor, and not only was he born dirt poor, but he's a black man in America, and that's Herman Cain. The man earned every penny he made. Now look, and you're right. There are people that make so much money that we can't even comprehend it. And they find a way to skirt around the tax laws. I will give you that, okay? But that number is so few that it's not even funny. When we're talking about the rich, when we're talking about people that make more than $250,000 a year, we're talking about people who are filing that have small businesses that file their income tax as individuals. Now, this country was built. Look, Stanley, I know you're probably tired of hearing this, but I've never gotten a job from a poor person. Most of the jobs I've had in my life have been by small businesses that built their business in their garage, and they make $1 million, $2 million a year, whatever. Nobody takes into account the amount of hours that they've put into building that business. Giving up so much family time, it's not even funny. I mean, this would include my biological dad, okay? And I mean, not that he's wealthy. He's not by any stretch of the imagination. But these are the kind of people that the Obama administration wants to tax, or people, earners that make more than $250,000 a year. A lot of those people are small business owners that file income tax as personal income tax. And we're going to tax them more? I mean, take Papa John's, for instance. Yeah, it's a huge corporation. McDonald's, it's a huge corporation. But it's a huge corporation built up of a lot of small individual franchises. A lot of people that yes, compared to me, they're very wealthy. But they provide jobs to people that need jobs. Yet we're going to tax them more, and we're going to impose this monstrosity of Obamacare on them, which what is the end result now, Stanley? You have these companies that are looking at reducing the hours below 40 hours per week to get around having to do Obamacare. Who wins? Who's winning in this situation?
Well, Obamacare, to tell you the truth, the Obamacare, I thought that Republican and Democrat were going to sit down to do a proper law. I didn't go through the 300 pages of the law. I wish we would have sit down, but the Congress, like I said, it's beyond just the election. If we want to change Black America to what it is, we have to come to see them. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. If you need to sit down in a room as 10 people and get a deal, you're sitting down all night and all day to get that deal. So you're both going to listen to each other, and you're going to stop saying, oh, I'm going to shut you down, and I'm going to make sure you're a one-term deal. That's, I heard of so many Republicans saying that, and I was like, what are you doing for the country?
Well, and I just heard Harry Reid say that prior to the election as well. That really goes both ways. So let's, Stanley, you sound like too intelligent of a man for us to play that game, because that does go both. It goes both ways.
It goes both ways, and I don't agree with that. We're responsible for electing them. They're responsible for finding solutions, sitting down like me and you would do. I would be an owner. You would be an owner. You think I would tell you like, oh, I need your business. You need me. You think I wouldn't sit down with you and say, I got to find a solution. We got to sit down and find a solution, no matter what.
Stanley, let me ask you a question. Are you for, like, limited government? Are you for state rights controlling how they operate over the federal government?
I think state rights should have a little bit more rights, but the state rights are not doing what they need to do, and I feel that sometimes when there's abuse, especially in healthcare and things like that, that there has to be the government has to interfere and say, hey, well, what's happening with that? It's not normal that some people have a debt of $250,000 or $125,000, and they look at it and say, yeah, I got the operation, but I'll never be able to pay that debt. It's not normal that people in school come and with a debt of $120,000, $150,000, and they look at each other, first, I don't have a job. Second, how am I going to pay with that debt? And even if I declare bankruptcy, that debt stays with you.
Well, do you think some people just make some bad choices? I mean, you know, why would you go to school and spend $100,000 on a college education?
Because you were thought as very young. What we were all thought: go to school, get good grades, and then you go to a company, whatever, move up the echelon, and you will do it. That was the American dream. That's what we all heard. That's what I heard.
Yeah, but is a college education worth that much? Really?
No, that's another debate. I agree with you. It's not worth that much. It's not in my eyes, but say that to people. Say that to young people. Young people don't believe it because they've been taught. Their parents, my parents said that to me, and I hear all the parents saying, go to a good high school. Then from a good high school, go to the best university. Yeah, you're going to own debt, but don't worry. You go inside a proper a corporation and everything, and you work all your way up, and you pay your debt.
Yeah, you know, and the onus should be on the parents, if that's the case, is that why don't you just go and create your own?
The government is not responsible for doing jobs. It's us who's responsible for doing jobs. It's us who's responsible for creating. Government puts you just in a climate to put you in an environment to encourage you to do things. But then it's us who has to create jobs. Government's never responsible for jobs. We are.
Well, hey,
I
guys,
right.
We need to
let's get some other people on here.
Yeah, we need to bring in some other people here. Stanley, hang with us. I just want to say, Stanley, thank you again for calling us. Hang tight. And my brother, I don't know.
Yes.
You're not exactly a liberal. I don't know what you are. I can't quite put my finger on it yet.
I think he's confused, but Stanley is a good guest, and, you know, I got to say that. You know, I mean, I don't agree with him, but, you know, I can sit there and respect him, you know.
Let's go ahead and bring – I'm gonna start by bringing our brother in from Alaska, Stanley, and Bing, and Rick from – that would be the Alaskan Boyd. Stanley, hang with us. I'm sure there's going to be questions for you, but we need to get in some other folks here, okay?
No problem.
Stanley, I never thought you'd be our special guest tonight.
Hey, Stanley.
Hello.
Stanley, you made some comments earlier that we are divided and that we need to take care of the poor and that Obamacare, you know, is going to do that and everything. Well, you're not old enough to remember, but back before the Great Society in 1964 that was implemented by Lyndon Baines Johnson, another Democrat, that all of the people in the United States took care of their neighbors in need. We did not have the government involved. We didn't need the government involved. The government imposed itself on these issues. The government has now screwed up all of these issues for the poor. When I was a kid and I was poor, the churches took care of us. You know, those in the community that needed something. If you needed food and your husband was, or your father was a drunk alcoholic and spent all his money on booze, the church didn't give you money to your mom to go out and get food for your family. Because the church also knew that if they money was in your mom's hand, that the old man would take it from her. So what the church did instead was they took your mom with her grocery list to the grocery. They did not get in there and say, you can't have this, you can have this, you can't have this. Your mom bought the groceries that was on her list. They went to the checkout stand, and the church paid for it. Or the organization, if it wasn't a church, paid for it. Nobody at that time was ever hungry. I mean, you might be hungry for a day. You might be hungry for an afternoon or something like that. But nobody was hungry. Nobody had distorted bellies because they were hungry. Same thing with clothing. You may not have gotten the off the rack
most
fashionable clothes. No, you got what was hand-me-downs from other families whose kids have outgrown their clothes. But the clothes were still usable and in good shape. And that is what you got. You know, you were clothed. You were fed. You were taken care of. You had heat. If somebody got sick in your house, your neighbors were right there to help you, no matter what. If something happened that was adverse to anybody in the town, your neighbors were there to help you. Just like you were saying earlier about how we needed to have Obamacare because the poor. Son, you need to go see what poor is. Our poor in our country are the richest poor in the world. They are. You go off to some of these countries and see what poor is. Living in shanties, having sewer go down the street, and stuff like that, then you'll realize what poor is. People would not take anything for nothing. People had honor. They had virtue. If your neighbor gave you something that you needed, the next time your neighbor needed something that he didn't have, you gave it to him because you had it. You know, it was as simple as that. People living as people. People respecting everybody else as people. Until 1964 and until the Department of Education came in that took over all of the schools in the United States, as opposed to the schools being run by the local school board as it was prior to then you just don't realize what you've meant.
There was 79, wasn't it, boy?
79, somewhere in that area.
78, 79, because I know I went through my whole entire life in school. My whole entire life now in school without the Department of Education. I didn't need it. We didn't need it back then.
The local Board of Education took care of your schooling.
Okay. And and if not, then a church stepped in or whatever and contributed books. A church can't even contribute books to a school anymore because it's a conflict of interest. The NAACP or the NAACP,
the Johnson Act took,
is what I call
the
them
Johnson now. Act took care of that.
Huh?
The Johnson Act took care of that.
Yeah, but I'm saying back then, it was a different thing.
It was another LBJ tweak, which was that churches were not allowed to speak on political issues in their communities, at their pulpit, at any time, or they would become taxed. And that is...
Yes, they would lose their tax status. And
that's
I said it's time that the churches started own up, you know, man up, get in the game here, get some skin in the game. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't understand if Obamacare and if Obama is going to take away your contributions to the churches and so on, then why not just say okay, let's go for it, you know?
Don't put Obama's name on that right now, Bing, because that the Johnson Act happened before Obama. It's a federal government.
He's pushing it now, you know.
I'm listening to what you just said and everything. Yeah, back in the 60s, whatever the date you said, that churches was there to help and everybody was there to help each other and we would care about the neighbor. Let's go back to 2012. To what we are now. A lot of people who are rich don't care about your neighbor. Don't care about. They only care. Some CEOs I know care about how am I going to make the money and how I'm going to get richer and richer off your back. That's why a lot of people got cut in Lehman's Brothers. That's why Enron is out. That's why, you know, you're talking about generation where there used to be fairness. There's not fairness in our country. There's not fairness at all. It's about greed. It's about how can I own you? It's about I'm above you and everything, and you're surprised that you don't have that collaboration. You're surprised that people are looking at you. You want fairness? Bring back the fairness of individual. When I'm hearing some people getting millions of dollars and being greedy about it off the back of other people working their butts off for them, and they're not even getting 1 or 2% augmentation for their own job. Go see your boss and ask him, can I have 17% because I brought $500,000 or something to your company? Good luck with that.
Hey,
we're talking to Stanley the Lib, but I want to ask one thing. Stanley, what do you think about the OWS crowd? How do you think about them? What do you think they stand for? What do you think their principles are? Are they, you know, how motivated are they? I mean, do they influence you that way?
Repeat what you said. I didn't hear. The OWS crowd.
The Wall Street.
Occupy Wall Street crowd.
Occupy Wall Street.
Okay. That was basically an accumulation of saying that they were fed up. They were fed up with seeing the rich getting it. The rich getting out the thing that we couldn't get out. If I would have done the thing that happened in 2008 at the bank, I would have been arrested. Period.
Stanley.
Yeah,
Stanley.
We bailed out the banks, didn't we not?
We bailed out the bank because we had no choice.
There's a thing in economics, and it's basically that there's certain businesses that need to fail. There's certain economic procedures that need to fail so it cleans the economy out so that we can get back on track. We are not back on track. Obama with his bailouts and George Bush, I'm not putting this all on Obama. I'm saying that the last 2 years of George Bush, or at least last year, pretty much made me wince, okay? But he was bailing out people. Obama just took it to a bigger level. He just took it to a bigger level, you know. And he said there is nothing too big to fail. There's nothing too big to fail. There's no
so you think that Obama should have never took them? Go ahead.
Well, wait a minute. Chrysler went bankrupt. They're bankrupt.
So you think as the president of the United States, he should have said, okay, I'm keeping the money. I'm not giving it. So Chrysler is out. The banks are out. GM is out. Do I need to go through the whole company that would have gone out?
No.
It would have been 20 times worse than it is now.
Stanley, exactly. Let me get
Stanley,
in here. Let me.
In America, in the United States of America, I've seen banks go bankrupt. I've seen car companies.
You never saw Lehman Brothers is the fifth bank in the world. I'm not talking the fifth bank in America. It's the fifth bank in the world. You understand that? It's not just America. It's the fifth bank in the world. You're not only affecting here. You're affecting the rest of the world by your decision.
We need to get some other callers in here, okay? Yes. Got a lot of callers on the line here, and I think probably most of them
are on restricted hold, okay?
I think a lot of them probably want to speak to Stanley, and so yes. Stick around, Stanley. But as for what you were just saying, I think Bing and I would agree, and most of the callers on here, that's what we have bankruptcy laws for. There's no such thing as a government or a business too big to fail. We kind of got snowed, Stanley, and I think you have to agree, okay? Let's just be honest here. Obama snowed us on this, and misled the public on – and look, I'm no Mitt Romney fan, but the public, by and large, misled the bankruptcy deal that Mitt Romney wanted the Detroit to go through, because that's essentially what they went through anyway. It was a managed bankruptcy that – instead of going through bankruptcy court, you and I are paying for, Stanley. And the facts are the facts. That cannot be denied. That's why we have bankruptcy.
I agree with you. That's why we have bankruptcy and everything. But I don't believe that Obama did what he needed to do to save that industry. Did that industry give back our money or he didn't?
No, it hasn't gotten back their money. It hasn't gotten back their money. And, in fact, GM is now wanting – the government to sell back its stocks at a 30% loss to us, the American taxpayer, because they can't get anybody to come to work for them because they're a government-owned company, essentially. And who got and Stanley, just for the record, when Obama saved Detroit, with the exception of Ford, who's doing perfectly well without the government bailout, by the way, I might add, who got the shaft? Who got the shaft in Detroit? Delphi. Why did Delphi get the shaft? Because they're non-union. Delphi took it up the frickin' ass without even a reach around. And all of those people at Delphi lost their retirement. Now, that's just the truth. You can Google it.
No, I'll Google it. I believe that you're telling the truth. If you're saying the truth, I'll Google it and then I'll listen.
But Stanley, I want you to stick with us, and I want to encourage you to visit with us on a weekly basis. I'm enjoying. Look, I don't want you to feel attacked. Okay.
I don't feel attacked at all. I feel that your show is one of the. I feel more shows should be like yours. I don't feel attacked at all.
There are strong feelings on both sides, and my brother Bing has strong, and I have strong feelings, and Boyd and Kurt, we all have, and you have, and we respect all of them. So I want to encourage you to call us back because Stanley, I believe what you're saying. We're all Americans, and we've got to work through this. And I don't think you're Stanley the Lib. I think we need to come up with a different name for you. But I want to bring in Chuck now, okay? Chuck, come on in here.
Good afternoon.
How you doing,
Good
Chuck?
Afternoon. Good afternoon.
Well, I'm not doing real well at the moment, actually.
Tell us about it, Chuck.
Well.
Did I piss you off or Stanley?
Let me put it this way. Today's show is supposed to be about discussing moving forward, and all we've discussed so far is moving backwards.
You're absolutely right, Chuck. So how can
and so
get us
enough of that? Enough of that. Man on the street observation. There is a gross amount of ignorance about governance on the street. Even in some of our halls of government, there's gross ignorance. We can't keep up with the moderate BS. If we're going to be a constitutional republic, come on in. We're going to be a constitutional republic. We can't be a constitutional democracy or maybe a monarchy, or we can't do that. We can't pick and choose. It's not a cafeteria list. So going forward, how do we do that? We start educating people about the way the government is designed, the way it's supposed to work, that it is limited. All of the BS we got going on right now, health, education, and welfare was actually a late 50s model that was split in 79 into HHS and education. So we just need education, education, education. Or we can't fight City Hall. They got bigger, better guns than we got. So that's all I got to say.
Chuck, let me ask you a question. Would you say in 2010, we in the Tea Party were on target with our fiscal message, our fiscal conservative message? Because we, my God, we won big. I mean, we won big, and it wasn't, it pulled in people from across the spectrum. Is what I'm hearing you saying, Chuck, that from 2010 to 2012, we lost our message, and by virtue of that, we lost our voice?
Well,
I would say yes for that.
In a great deal, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't have a message in 2012. Our standard bearer was not a good standard bearer for us. And he was last on my list back in last year this time. So.
Yeah, I knew he would be last on yours. because I know that your list and my list are pretty much the same. Well, how do we move this train forward, Chuck? I mean, and we've got Stanley here, someone who is on my studio board is Stanley the Lib, but who I have serious reservations as to whether or not he's truly a liberal in the strictest sense of the term. How can we use Stanley to help us improve our message and move forward?
Well, you know, Stanley seems to be a fairly intelligent gentleman. He might be misguided, but he seems to be fairly intelligent. And if he can take a course in U.S. political history and go back and start digging, why did the founders write what they wrote in the Constitution? Why did they write what they wrote in the Declaration? What was the influence on them that caused them to speak that way? And if he can do that, and we got 4 years, and it's taken me the better part of three to really get a good handle on it, then he can help us that way. He can bring along other people. That's what we all have to do.
I think Stanley's kind of a moderate person. And he said something,
yeah,
Chuck, that you heard that intrigued me. And that was that perhaps Ron Paul or Herman Cain had a better message that would have been better suited to us in the general election.
Well,
I don't think Stanley is an anomaly to that. How do we get that message out?
It was a better message in that it was focused. It wasn't.
Yeah, that's exactly that's the thing. It was focused, exactly like you said. That's the thing that I wish. That's a great thing that you just said. It was focused. It was, this is what's going to happen.
And when Romney is bantering back and forth with Obama, answering Obama instead of bringing up his own agenda, he lost everybody.
Yeah.
He lost the whole independent vote.
But when we ask the question, how are you going to do the $5.7 trillion, answer the question. Don't deviate focus.
Yeah, well,
and I'm sure
you know, Obama said he was going to cut the deficit in half, too. And
I'm not going with the deficit. Of course, Obama did the deficit. But if you're saying you're going to make a promise of $5.7 trillion, show it to the American people. This is how I'm going to do it.
Who came up with that number, by the way? That $5.7 trillion. Who came up with that number?
He did. I didn't come up with that number. He kept up with
that.
So we're arguing over somebody who's got a number, and then somebody who's got a four-year non-budget.
$5 trillion in debt.
And we're talking about some guy that came up there and with Paul Ryan and so on and said that that they're going to do this and that. And you're talking about a president? You voted for a president, really? 4 years.
I voted for a president
one
that
budget.
I could.
One budget. Please tell me. Please.
Okay, now. Trivia time.
I don't know. I'm getting like,
Okay, I voted for a president because he came. I think a lot of Americans voted for the president because he came.
We're not talking about going forward anymore, are we?
Did he make like a tingle or something? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with Obama that, other than maybe voter fraud and everything else. And I also would like to ask you about Benghazi. What do you think about that?
Well, and before you answer those, Stanley, Chuck was trying to ask a question that I couldn't quite understand. Chuck, what was that question?
Come on, brother. Let's go forward here.
Trivia
time. Where does the right to health care, education, housing, a job,
not a constitution.
Where does that come from?
It's from the liberal left. It's not in the Constitution. There is no.
It's written down somewhere.
No, it's not written down. It's not in the Constitution.
No, I think
that's Chuck's point.
Yeah,
but it is written down somewhere. And that was FDR's.
The
new Bill of Rights that set up the Great Society that Kennedy was probably not going to implement. And that's why, I mean, if you think a guy's going to say,
I understand,
and then implement the Great Society?
No, I understand what you're talking about. I'm just saying that I don't think these people understand that. They don't understand how encroaching and how
I still understand.
People are. They
a lot of cars in here. I need to weave in, and we're
all right. I'm
unfortunately
out.
we're getting close to the end of the show, so I want to get these other folks in that want to speak. So I'm going to bring in Ron here. He's been waiting for a while. And then Barbara, you're on deck. And then Becca, you're on after Barbara. So, Ron, come on in here. We need to work through this. It looks like we're going to need to do some more shows. Maybe we need to have another Soldiers of Patriotism midweek. I want to thank everybody for being with us today. We got a lot to discuss. Chuck's right. Bing's right. Stanley's right. Kurt's right. We're all, I'm not going to say anybody's wrong. We've got a lot to discuss. Ron, come on in here.
Well, that's what you have me for. I'll tell you who's right and who's wrong. And this caller stand is so full of it that I can't even hardly contain myself. Let me ask you a question, Stan. You're so upset that people have more money than you and have this ungodly amount of money coming in. What gives you the right in our Constitution for you to reach in there and snatch some of their money? They made it. They didn't take it from you. How does that work? First of all,
how did they made it? That's a questionable thing because they
and that's
made it
none
because
of your business. This is America.
But you gotta understand something. No. Whoa. If we're going to be honest, some of them made it. Some of them made it not honestly the way you and me would have made it.
No,
they didn't make it because they were working hard. They made it because they knew what they needed to do. They said, oh, this company is going to be this way. Oh, let me tell you in the private what it is. And you became greedy.
Okay.
They didn't make it the way you and me is working. They didn't make
you're
it that
missing,
way.
You're missing the point. The point is, where in any of that does that make it okay for you to take what they've got?
And where is in any of that does it make it okay that the rich are getting richer under the work of other people who are working as hard as me and you? When does that make it okay?
Business. It's just to gain money.
What is that?
Money.
It is my business. It is my business. I'm sorry. It is my business. Things are getting more and more expensive. It is my business.
Somebody's wrong. This is why you can't talk to these trolls. They will not listen. This guy Stan, he's in the troll heaven. He's got a bunch of us conservatives on here listening to him and giving him time of day. You've got two or three on your chat screen here that I've been complaining about that nobody's took off. I mean, are we a conservative talk show? Are we going to set ourselves up as fools for these idiots?
Ron, we are a conservative talk show, Ron, but I just want to give voice to the other side so that we can hear what they're thinking in hopes of perhaps helping ourselves to be more successful.
Let me ask him a question. What happened to fairness in America? What happened to that? Because it used to be a fair question. What happened to that? Because trust me, I can bring you cases. There's no fairness. I know people who's working as hard as you, and trust me not, they're working their butts off, and they're not getting anything better. Yeah, they're getting $50,000, $60,000, and they're working their butts off for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years.
Let me answer that. I want to answer that real quick, and then I want to bring in our next person that's on hold, which is Barbara. Stanley, I don't know what your parents taught you, but I know what my parents taught me. Life's not fair. It's just simply not fair. In the story, in the conversation, in the paragraph, period, no question mark. Life's not fair. We've got people, look, for all of these people that earn all of these tons and tons of money, they didn't just fall into it. I don't believe that, and I refuse to believe that. Yes, sure.
How many people did they employ, Michael, that made money? How many people did they employ? These liberals don't want to sit there and acknowledge that.
And I agree. And that's what I'm saying. People, by and large, people that are successful because they work their ass off. And I think that's what Ron's saying. What gives the right to the government to reach into my pocket for my hard work? If I own a business, I'm going to pay what the market bears. It was proven in the 90s, and this goes back to something that Bing said to you earlier, Stanley, about the minimum wage. When we had a Congress under Newt Gingrich and a White House under Bill Clinton, we reformed welfare. We took people, which I might add was a bill written by Rick Santorum. We took people off of welfare and put them on workfare. Our economy was booming so well that minimum wage wasn't even in the question because you had McDonald's competing for people to flip freaking burgers and they were paying them $10 an hour. So we know that capitalism works. We know that the free market works. I mean, you've got to give us...
No, I give you that, but it works to the point that when it becomes, it works until the point that greed comes in. When greed comes in, then all hell breaks loose. And
but there's greed on all sides. Let's take a look at Joe Biden, for instance. All right, the man. We were talking about helping our neighbor earlier. Something that our friend Alaskan was talking about back in the 50s and 60s. Something that most of us all here do. Look, I think you're in the Northeast. A lot of people that listen to this show are helping people in the Northeast right now out of the kindness of their heart. Here's the thing. You've got a vice president who contributes $354 freaking dollars to charity. You've got all of these assholes in Hollywood that make billions upon billions of dollars and don't contribute a frickin' penny of it to it, but they want all of the rest of us to pay for it in the form of government largesse to help people. So it comes from both sides. We walk the walk on this site. Are there people, are there assholes that make a lot of money that do nothing to help other people? Sure there are. But it's not all the people on the right. It's not just wealthy GOPers. I mean, we've got a vice president that doesn't contribute jack shit to charity.
But do you understand that almost the thing of being greedy and everything almost caused the rest of the world and us going down? If it wasn't for the house market and the bank saying we're going to make money over people that don't even have money to pay their houses,
Let me tell you about that.
Let's get Barbara and Becca in here, please, and Brenda, actually.
Let's do, but I want to say something about that housing situation because that happens to be the industry that I'm in. Are you aware, Stanley, that we have had people over the last 10 years that have borrowed money against their house so that they could sit out on their goddamn boat that are now underwater and losing their freaking home? That's what we have. This is what I do for a living. I foreclose homes. That's what I take people's homes away from them because they had a home that they kept borrowing in the equity. They kept borrowing into the equity and kept borrowing into the equity so that they could have their give it to me now lifestyle. And then when the housing market collapses and they've got a house that they've borrowed $1 million on for a house that's worth $250,000, we're now in a crisis situation because of the give-it-to-me-now mentality. Yet I've got a sister and a brother-in-law who have a house because of these people that is not worth as much as the county says it's worth, and they pay their fucking bill every month on time. Nobody's given them a goddamn handout. Nobody's given me a handout for fixing my credit so that I can buy a house or get the house that I bought to take care of my family. You see, that's what happens when you loosen up regulation so that people can have things that they don't deserve because they didn't goddamn earn it. And I'm not fussing at you, Stanley. I'm fussing at the system. That's what I'm fussing at. Is we've got a freaking Burger King mentality now where we get it our way. We don't work for the shit that we earn anymore. I'm sorry, Barbara, come on in here and save me.
Barbara.
Just trying to breathe here because I'm annoyed here because, Stanley, I grew up poor. My parents were divorced. I grew up living with my grandparents, and I did get a lot of hand-me-downs, and I was so grateful for those hand-me-downs because I had clothes to cover my ass, and I had a coat on my shoulders because somebody gave it to me because my mother didn't have the money to go get it. And the food, if it wasn't for my grandparents, we would have been out on the streets. Okay, so there's my life story in early life. Then I go to school, I get my high school diploma, I grow up, I get a job, I have two kids of my own, get divorced, get remarried, have a house, have a job. My husband and I have really good jobs. Market starts going bad. My husband gets laid off, has an accident. Then we have to go into bankruptcy. Then, you know, life's still going okay. We file bankruptcy, we get our power turned off because we didn't have the money to pay it. We, little by little, I'm building myself back up. Now, I have to pay out of my pocket to go to school because between my salary and my husband's salary, which is maybe around $50,000 a year, we make too much money for me to get any help, okay? So I have to do it on my own, and I'm doing it because I want a better life. Now, with this president, why do I want a better life for myself to pay for... Was that my cutoff?
I don't know what that was, but I think it went away.
So, So I'm in a dilemma because of this, because my money, my hard-earned money, is also going to have to pay more. And I've been saying this for a long time. People that are on welfare, they get better benefits than I do, and I have to pay for it. And you know what? If we go back to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and everything else, and these libs, and you other guys out there, yeah, you too. You can go kiss my ass, because I am educated. And then there's that other liberal one out there, too. You can kiss my ass, too. I'm educated, and I'm trying to get even further educated. Just because I don't have a fucking degree, does not mean I'm not educated. I know a lot more than you do. Okay. Thank you for letting me rant, because these people really need to go back and read the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all the Federalist Papers, and the Declaration of Independence.
All right? Can I ask you a question?
Please do.
Okay. I'm listening to you. You're a hardworking American and everything. How do you feel when you hear the rich people and everything being greedy, getting all the cover that you don't have, that you think you should have, getting free taxes, getting the corporate things, getting many things, that having some people getting $47 million and paying no tax, nothing, or almost putting our economy crashing because they decided they want to make more money? How do you feel? Hello? Hello?
Barbara, are you still there?
I think we lost her.
Okay, well, hang tight. Let's go ahead and bring Becca in here. Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. Wait a minute, Becca. You accidentally went on mute, Barbara. Did you hear the question, and can you answer it?
I did hear the question, and I want to be like that. That's why I'm going back to school. I want to make more money. I don't want to have to struggle and end up on any kind of assistance. I want to be able to make it on my own. And
I'm not going to be able to
do that unless I keep going ahead.
I have no problem making on your own. That's not what the point was. The point was, you're making on your own, you're rich and wealthy, and you're still covering your ass and everything because of your protection, because of corporate things, because, like I said, some people make $47 million, pay no tax, because of bringing us down to 2008 because bank wanted to make money. How do you feel as an American? Because that's a fact. That's a fact.
Like
right.
No, it's not.
Like
your mentality
said,
is an emotion.
Okay. Since you've been in the industry, please explain to the American people. Since you were in the industry, the person, the host of the show, what is COD? Since you know the industry, what is COD?
I don't know who you're asking.
I'm asking to the host. I'm asking to the person that said, I know about real estate. I know what it is. And
me. I didn't hear your question. Say again.
What is COD?
What is COD?
Yeah.
I have no idea what COD is.
COD is basically the bank. COD is basically that the bank to make money went to the insurance company and said, you know what, we're going to invent a product called COD and we're going to put an investment on it to have people sell it and everything. Basically, the investment is over the mortgages and the debt that people owe.
Stanley, yeah. let me interrupt here. We're about to run out of time. The show can go on, but if you want to hear the conversation, you need to call in now, 718-305-7176. The show's about to go into record mode. It will drop for those of you that are not called. No, you're fine, Stanley. If you're not called in, then the show's going to drop. So call in now, and the conversation can continue. It's just not going to be going out over the airwaves. So call in now. Stanley, I don't know what COD is. I foreclose homes for a living. I don't make mortgage loans. I take them away. But I know why I know why we're in the situation that we're in, being because of what I've done for the last 6 years. I understand why we're in a housing crisis. We're in the housing crisis because we loosened up the regulation and we allowed folks to buy homes that weren't creditworthy. And then coupled with that, we allowed people to refinance their home and take the equity out of their house so that they could finance an extravagant lifestyle. And then when the interest rates went sky high, housing prices dropped, and everything that happened, now all of these people are crying because they can't afford their freaking home. Well, had they not bought a home that they couldn't afford to begin with, or had they not refinanced their home and taken the equity out of it to buy that $100,000 boat sitting on the lake over here, then they wouldn't be in the situation they're in. I mean, at some point, we have to take personal responsibility. Do we not, Stanley?
Yeah, of course we do, but we have to also look at what the bank did. COD, basically, it's an investment bank that bundled the mortgage that you're talking about with other loans and debt, and they sold it to the investor. And the rating agency that was supposed to protect us did a AAA rating to those CODs. That's when it went down. That's what CODs are.
Yes.
Basically, they took all the mortgages, all the debt.
But why did we get into that situation in the first place? How did we get into the subprime mortgage lending business? Why?
Well,
why and how did we get into that?
Because they were lending, the bank were having money. That's like, how could we make more money? Let's lend it to people that can't even pay.
No, we had Barney Frank and Chris Dodd that made it a racial issue and said that if we don't extend loans to folks that can't afford a home, then it's racist. That's exactly.
Yeah, they're not feeling their American dreams. It's like you said, they're not feeling their American dreams. I understand what you're saying. Hello.
Let's we're here. Let's go ahead. I'm going to open up the mics. We're going to start back up at the top with Kurt. Look, we got all the time in the world. We're in record mode. If you want to hang tight with us, you're welcome to hang tight with us. We've got plenty of time. I'm going to go ahead. I want to bring Kurt back in here. Kurt, what do you have to say to anything that's been said?
I got a question for Stan. Stanley, let me tell you who I am. I'm an old guy in Tennessee, okay? I'm an old white guy. And on your two Republican potential candidates that you mentioned, Herman Cain and Ron Paul, let me say that. Herman Cain, yes. Ron Paul, no, okay? I went to another town back during the primary race to listen to and meet and shake hands with Herman Cain. I was highly impressed. I was greatly disappointed when things shook out the way they did and he was taken out of the race. I want you, and you probably can't answer this question, but I'd like for you to think about it, and maybe you can give me a philosophical answer maybe later. Here in West Tennessee, I write a column for the weekly in the newspaper, the daily newspaper. And any time back then that I mentioned Herman Cain, or since then if I mentioned Lieutenant Colonel Allen West, the local liberals, both black and white, they curse Allen West. And they curse Herman Cain, and they curse me for mentioning them. Why do you think the liberals down here in Tennessee would take that approach to Herman Cain and Allen West?
Because they just because they're black and they're conservative, for a lot of black people, they're traitors because they're not Democratic. A lot of black people, I would say, would deplore that because you're black, you're supposed to be Democratic. You're not supposed to be Republican, you're not supposed to be conservative. And they don't even know their own history.
Oops, sorry about that, Bing and Teresa.
Oh, that's okay.
I just wanted to throw that into the mix there because there are so many ways to come at this and so many aspects of it that we get mired down in detail, I think, from time to time, focusing on the this one issue. It's not that they don't need to be focused on, but we got to look at this in a wide spectrum. That was my question for you, Stanley. Okay.
Stanley, being and everybody else, we've got just before anybody couldn't call in, our buddy Teresa Bruski from Minnesota got in, and she's on with us now. So I want to bring Teresa in here and see what her thoughts are. Stanley, you don't probably know who Teresa Bruski is. Teresa and I have been together with everybody on this phone line, Chuck and Ron and Kurt and Barbara and all these folks. These folks have been with me for 2 years now. Teresa being the first probably of everybody that's on the line. So I want to bring her in now. Teresa, what say you?
It's pretty obvious by the last statement that he made about saying it was the evil bank that wanted to rape the poor during, giving them subprime mortgages. This goes back to the Carter administration. Bill Clinton picked it up, and then Barney and Frank, or Dodd, whatever you want to call it, they pushed it through. So there's a lot of stuff that's being forced on us that we don't agree with. It's not because we're white or we're godly people. It's because we're sick and tired of going to work and seeing nothing being a benefit to ourselves personally, because isn't that what work is about? Putting food in your own mouth, putting a roof over your head, taking care of yourself and helping out the poor when they need it, when you see fit to, jump in and help your church or the Red Cross or whomever it is that you want to help. But they want to take that away too by, legislating, churches from doing X, Y, and Z, because it's just infuriating. I'm just upset. That's all. It's really upsetting.
Well, Stanley, I think you could, Stanley, and I don't want you to feel like you're being ganged up on here. I mean,
no,
I think
I'm not feeling ganged up at all.
Dude, you're calling a conservative radio station.
Do with Stanley. This has to do with the mentality of the other side.
I'm not feeling ganged up. I feel her frustration, but I feel the same frustration that she does. I feel the same frustration that the fairness doesn't work with it. I feel the frustration that when I read about what the bank did and everything, and they did things that if I would have done that, I would have been in prison. Sorry.
Stanley,
go ahead.
Let me ask you a question,
Stanley.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Ron.
This is Boyd.
Our boy, go ahead.
Stanley. Do you know what the rules are out there on the open field to make money and greed?
No, what's the rule?
What are the rules?
Yeah.
The rules are something that you need to read. You need to study. You need to take part in. Because once you understand the rules and you see how they're played, then Stanley, you can become rich too. And you won't have to covet what those people have, because you can go out and get it too. That's all there is to it. The door is not shut. The door is not closed. The rule book is out there. All you need to do is read the rules of the game and go out there and follow the rules of the game. And you too, one day, will be extremely rich, and you will have people like you bitching and complaining at your heels because you have it and they don't.
No, I have no problem with the rich being rich and everything. The problem I have is when the rich are taking advantage of people of becoming rich. If you work hard and became rich, you'll be the first one to hear that. But if we go to what happened in 2008...
Stanley. Stanley. You have got your head so far up your ass you can't see straight. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. People get rich by doing what they do. People get paid by the rich to do what they do. The rich pays the worker what the rich feel the worker is worth. If you feel you are worth more money, you better prove that you're worth more money. When a guy puts together in a factory a widget, and he can put together 10 widgets in an hour, and he gets paid a dollar a widget, and the guy next to him, he puts together 20 widgets in an hour, he gets paid $20 an hour. Now, who is wrong there? The guy who's making the $20 an hour or the guy who's making the $10 an hour? The $10 an hour guy has enough opportunity to make 20. He can make 15. He can make 30. But the thing about it is he willing to put in the effort to do it?
Okay. And I agree with you with that part. But you think that corporation is like that?
Don't be saying that the rich are making money off the back of the workers.
Yes, they are. There's many rich who are making
money. No, they're not. Look, the engineer that created this freaking widget.
I work in a corporation. I don't work with small business.
Stanley, get your head out your ass. Corporations are there to make money. They make money with a product that they sell. Now, if you go out and you buy that product because you want it, you are the problem for the situation that you're talking about, because you are supporting the corporation. You're not supporting the worker. You're supporting the corporation. The corporation then, in turn, supports the worker by paying the worker to make the product that you're buying. And they do not make money off of, like you say, off the back of poor, off the back of...
Okay. Let me ask you a question, since you think that they're not making the money off of employees. Do you know that America, and they've been studying around the world, that the difference between a CEO and an employee is the biggest difference ever in the United States compared to other compared to any other places around the world? How do you explain that? And let me come back to that. Also, in the 1960s, 70s, the difference wasn't so big. It got bigger and bigger. That more the time came up, it's getting bigger and bigger. And it's getting huger and huger. The difference between a CEO and and you can do the research, because if you don't believe me, there's been research about that. They compared around the world, the CEO, and they compare employees here. I mean, the same work and everything. The difference here, they're getting more and more money, the CEOs, compared to the employees. Employees are not getting the augmentation that they... And by the way, inflation is getting there every year.
Hey, Stanley, can I ask you...
I'm having this conversation right now.
All right.
Now, Stanley...
This is Conservative Nation Radio. I want you
to take your friggin' numbers that you just stated, and I want you to go back, and I want you to look at those numbers. A CEO in China is not making near as much money as the CEO in America. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying the difference between the CEO of America, if you take a company, and the employee compared to the CEO of China and everything, the difference between them, the difference of income is a lot larger in America compared to CEO.
Let me bring those numbers into a little bit of perspective, okay? The CEOs are not making as much money over there as they are over here. Now, bring into perspective in the money, what are they paying their employees compared to over here?
Well, that's not for China.
Tell me.
I don't know China. I don't know China, but let's take the CEO.
Mexico. I don't care. You got people
You're throwing numbers out there like they're facts, and when I ask you to give me the numbers, you can't give me the numbers. I don't give a shit what those CEOs overseas are making compared to their employees. That's not my business. I really don't care. What I care about is what are my employees making, what is my CEOs making, and what is being made in the country, in this country. I don't give a shit what happens when it crosses the border. I really don't give a shit.
Well, bottom line is what you make what you can. Okay? That's the way it is. There is no infinite wealth. You know,
I've got a couple of questions here.
There's no limit on infinite wealth. In other words, if you can make all you can, then go ahead and make it. Who are we to sit there and chastise somebody for being creative, for being a producer, for being productive, for creating?
But that person that created the thing had employees that helped him create the thing. It's not like a CEO did it on his own. I have no problem with the CEO doing the money, but when it comes to the employees that work his butts off for you, and you're basically saying to those employees, sorry, I'm not giving you the 2%,
well,
but I'm getting my 20% for me, then we have a problem.
Well, dude, if you look,
and that's
if
a
you
fact of life. If you go
like
to corporations,
they could always go somewhere else, can't they?
Well,
they
wait,
can go somewhere else.
Hang on,
that's a fact of life. That's a fact that you, the conservative, don't want to look. You make it sound like, oh, look at the employees. They're not working hard. They're working as hard as you think. Oh, you think a CEO of any company did it on his own? I'm sorry to say it. They didn't. They didn't.
It's called.
Am I still here?
Yeah,
it's called
everybody's got a hot mic.
Rick,
look, Rick,
dude,
Stanley,
can,
Chuck,
can a second.
Ron, everybody's got a hot mic.
Look, if you want to go work somewhere else, go work somewhere else. Don't worry about working for the mayor.
Oh, yeah, go work. Good luck finding a job. Go work somewhere else. Listen,
what this all comes down to is the whole mentality of the evil corporation nonsense that isn't even relevant anymore today because we've got labor laws and we've got antitrust laws. What's going to happen here with trying to take down the evil corporation is that those laws that are trying to make these evil corporations pay their fair share is going to hit the small business who employ hundreds of thousands of more people than a corporation in this country ever has. So that's something to think about.
Why don't you
think about it, and I'm trying to listen to you interrupting everybody. You fail to what? You just don't want to accept the facts that, you know what, it doesn't matter if somebody makes money. And you know what? Yeah, these people are benefiting from these jobs that they take. And if they don't want to go someplace else and make some more money and use their power to go off somewhere else and make some more money by either getting an education, changing jobs, you know what? It's all your own personal responsibility. That's what is lacking here is an understanding on the left, or whomever it is that you want to call them these days, because they change their name every week. That's where the problem lies. They don't want anybody to be personally independent any longer. It's a thing called collectivism that we don't ascribe to, and we never will. That's all there is to it.
I think that's the key right there. It, the key to what – I think that was you, Teresa, or was that Barbara?
Mm-hmm.
Teresa. Yeah. That's the key. What Teresa just said is the key. It's personal responsibility. You see, Stanley, I want to ask you a question.
Why?
Let's just say that you invented widget X. Okay. Whatever that is, you invented it. You spent 20 hours a day working in your garage 7 days a week, taking away time from your wife and your children to perfect Widget X.
Mm-hmm.
And you were able to build a business from that, Stanley. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you started bringing on employees. Now, am I correct or am I wrong in saying that your main objective was to make money for yourself?
Yeah, your main objective was to make profit. I agree with you with that.
Okay. Now, you're going to pay your employees.
You deny the corporation.
You're going to pay your employees fair market wage. Okay? You're going to pay them whatever the market calls for you to pay them because you've got to hire people to help you produce Widget X. We all understand that. We all understand that in order to be successful, we've got to have people that come on board and help us produce that. But there is such a thing as fair market wage. So we're going to give them the benefits. We're going to give them the health insurance. We're going to give them we're going to contribute to their retirement. We're going to pay them fair market wage to help us make a profit. But ultimately, you being the person that created Widget X, Stanley, you want to do what?
Profit.
Exactly.
Because
you don't want to profit at the expense of having to pay everybody something that the government thinks is fair, or that the public at large thinks it's fair. Let me ask you a question. If you owned an NFL football team, do you think these guys that make millions and millions upon dollars a year to throw a ball, do you think they're making too much money, or do you think they're making fair market wage for the value of that market?
They're making fair value wage.
Absolutely, they're making. I mean, I think it's a gross amount of money. I'm not a sports fan, but they're making what the market bears. The key word there is market. If you don't like the market, then you get better education, you become a better athletics person, and you make your value worth more so that people will pay you more. But by the government mandating what you're going to make, it doesn't help you and your cause for all of the work and effort that you've put into creating Widget X.
Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
If you don't want to work for the man that's got all this money, why don't you start your own business and see where that goes? And then you'll be like us, saying, why the hell am I working so hard to pay the government for people that don't want to work? Give that a shot.
That's too hard. It's too complicated. It's too hard.
Well, yeah, got that, I guess.
Too bad.
No, you know, guys, let's be fair to Stanley. I think Stanley, and I could be wrong, I think Stanley is walking a fine line here. I mean, Stanley gave himself away when he told us that had Ron Paul or Herman Cain been our standard bearer, we'd have been much better off. Am I wrong, Stanley? You gave yourself away, didn't you? Stanley. I guess we lost Stanley.
Yeah, we lost him. Look, Michael, I mean, I guess, you know, it was interesting to hear the opposite side of a troll, you know. But I don't know, man.
I don't think Stanley's a troll. I really don't, guys. I think he's misguided.
I think he might be misguided,
and I did say that I don't think he's a troll, really, in chat. I said I just think he just, you know, messed up, but I don't know. I mean, how do you help people like that sit there and continue on saying that, you know, just tax the rich and tax business? I guess you don't.
Well, you know what? This is a great segue. We've got several folks on hold here, and I want to get closing thoughts from everybody so that we can enjoy what's left of our Sunday. So, being hold yours for the end of the show. Excuse me, I've had too many wines.
All right,
hold yours for the end of the show. Let's start with Rick, and then Boyd, you're on deck, and then Ron, and then Barbara, and then Teresa. So let's just some closing remarks. We'll call it a good Sunday. I think we learned a lot today, and we may need to consider doing a midweek show. I don't know, Bing. We'll discuss it. But you know, we got a long battle ahead of us, and we need, guys. I'm going to say this. Look, I'm not defending Stanley, but I think we need to make lemonade out of lemons, and we need to take from this conversation that we've had today the good from it that we can take from it to retool our message, if that's what needs to be done, so that we can win this battle. With that, Rick, go ahead, and Boyd, you're on deck.
Yeah, but, I mean, after this, I don't know what to say. I mean, like, you know, we're all supposed to forge ahead, you know, move ahead. And as a matter of fact, that's what the show tonight, the Titan 92 of OwnTheNarrative.com is going to be bringing up. It starts at 10 p.m. Eastern at www.ownthenarrative.com/live. I'm going to drop it not only in the Soldiers of Patriotism chat, but also in the Trad-Am chat. You know, so if you want to hear some ideas, you know, do call in. And of course, I'm gonna. And of course, I'm gonna be speaking a little bit more about it on my own show as well this Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. So, I mean, you know, all we have to do is just, you know, just press ahead. I don't know.
Well, thank you much, Rick, and you're doing a fantastic job on your show. And after the holidays, we're all going to, I think we need to have a CNR get together and see what direction we're going to take. I want to provide you guys, I'm looking at some website options. I need to get with Bing on that. I want to do some email options because I want to be able to provide an email address for all of you guys.
Yeah.
So we got a lot to talk about, and we can't give up this fight.
Yeah, and Michael, I need to get to you. I need to get with you because there is a soldier in distress.
Okay. Yeah. Shoot me an email.
Okay.
Boyd.
Well, I don't think the show went where it should have gone, but. It was a very interesting show.
Didn't you think so?
Stanley is the demographics we need to educate. Stanley is just about there, but he's got some twisted thoughts.
Boyd, let me ask you a question. I agree with you. The show didn't go where I thought it was going to go, but I didn't expect his phone call. Do you think we learned anything from it, Boyd?
Michael.
I have.
I've
learned that somewhere along the line, this boy got brainwashed, and he has his facts. Most of them, some of them are straight, but they're all skewed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, he's got the right information. They're just skewed, and he doesn't know how they're skewed. He thinks they're just right, and he does not understand. He is a product of the present, not a product of the past. And you know, as Chuck was trying to get in that this was a program of how and where we're going to go. It is a program of how and where we're going to go from here. But before we can get there, we have to know our past. If we don't know our past, if we don't realize where our past is, the only thing we're going to do is get into the same sinkholes and quagmires that we've already been through. And, you know, that's exactly where I see we are today. You know, and we're still hashing out old issues. We're trying to put the blame here, blame there, when we need to move forward. But we also need to know where we've been and what mistakes we have made in the past so we do not repeat them.
I don't think truer words could be spoken, Boyd. And you know what? I'm going to take responsibility for any failures that the show's had today. I'll take responsibility for that. I don't know. I think, in large part, I think this was constructive today. I think I needed to hear a Stanley. I've been hearing it all week, but I think we needed to hear it on here. I could be wrong. But my resolve is even stronger. My resolve is, I will say this, Brother Bing, my resolve is stronger today than it was before the show started.
Oh, yeah. But Michael, did he answer any of my questions? When I asked him simple questions, did he answer any of them?
No.
I didn't hear it.
No, he didn't, and liberals don't.
How is your life better with, what has Barack Obama done for you? Why not raise the minimum wage to like $20, $50 an hour? I mean, we went on and on. He didn't answer that. He just went off and, got off into some kind of evil tangent on big business.
They don't ever answer him.
No, they don't. You know, and see, that's the whole thing. I was trying to make him, you know, not make him look stupid, but, I mean, just his own opinion makes
but,
them
let me
look,
ask
look
all,
out to be where they
all
are.
Of you guys,
I mean,
and those of you that have not answered or haven't given closing remarks yet, maybe you can weave this into your closing remarks, though. But being in Boyd, let me just ask you, don't you find it ironic? I mean, am I reading too much into this, or is this man was this man just generally confused? Because he opened with that a Ron Paul or a Herman Cain would have been a better mouthpiece for our party. To me, that says a lot. That actually gives me hope for people like for Stanley and for people like him.
Well, I agree with you, Michael. As far as I go, I mean, I think he was very confused, and I do think that there is some hope for him. You know, I really do. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's a stupid person. He just seems like he's just not. He's listening to the wrong things. He's not catching the right kind of news. You know, he's not reading up on things. He's not learning things. But yeah, I don't think he's a stupid guy. I just think, you know, I mean, a couple times he really got to me, though, when he called and said that I don't understand being poor. I mean, you know, see, that's a typical liberal kind of philosophy is, you know, well, no, you don't understand where we come from, you know. You don't agree with us. You must be a racist, this and that, you know, and it just keeps going on and on. And that's where he grew up. I understand that. You know, I can deal with that, but I don't, you know, it's sometimes
well,
I don't want to put up with it. You know what I'm
saying?
Well,
Barbara's still on the line with us. She could probably tell us a little bit about where he grew up. We're going to get her in just a minute. But, Ron, real quickly to my question, Boyd, to my question, what did you think about that? And then, Ron, you're up next.
About what Stanley had?
Yeah, about how he opened up with it, our standard bearer, had it been Ron Paul or Herman Cain. I mean, is it me that just is he? I mean, because that's very confusing. How do you vote for Barack Obama, yet you say that had our standard bearer been Ron Paul or Herman Cain, you might have voted differently?
He held his nose and he voted for the devil he knew as opposed to the devil he didn't.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ron?
Well, this guy's saying his bread's still kind of doughy in the middle. He might need to keep it on bake just for a few more minutes. My wife likes to chime in, and I've told y'all about her a little bit, but her big question to Stanley that we didn't get to ask him was, what about this fair? What's the fair share? I would like to hear a liberal explain that to me. We've had 4 years of Obama trying to explain it to us, and he don't explain nothing. He just says it and thinks we know it. And we need to get away from this fair share business and get away from me worrying about what you've got in your pocket and wanting to take it away from me by guns, by force of guns, if nothing else. You know, that's got nothing to do with the Constitution that we live under. And it's changing America in a radical way. We're really losing control of it over that issue right there. And if people can't get over that, start worrying about their own business and take care of their own families, then there's nothing we need. There's nothing else for us to do.
I think, Ron, I tried to get on to him about that. I was wondering, like, what's the fair share for minimum wage? What's the fair share for, you know, what is Obama giving you? You know? What is he giving
you?
They
can't answer because there is no answer.
There is no answer, and that's why I asked him the question. See, I ain't stupid there, brother.
Hey, look here.
Well,
can you see me? I'm mooning you right now.
You're moving me.
Ron, we love you, brother. Barbara,
my wife,
come on.
Yes.
My wife will tell you that I did.
Barbara, come on.
Don't
tell her to take
Sook.
No pics. We don't need no pics floating
Sook.
Around of that.
Sook, slap him on the ass so we can hear that it is that.
I think our buddy from Carolina,
Slim Whitman, man. I can see him now. I can hear him now.
I think our buddy from North Carolina, Barbara, could probably enlighten us a little bit on Stanley. Let's bring her in. Barbara?
Barbara's
got to say.
On reform? Is that what you said?
God.
Barbara, help us out with Stanley.
I think if he listens more to us, he's going to get more of an insight as to what we, I mean, him coming on and sharing and saying what he did, and then listening to us talk about going from rags to riches, so to speak, maybe that's going to give him an incentive. And, you know, my husband was standing in the background, too, saying, what does he think his fair share is? And he didn't answer it because, of course, there's really no answer. But right now, New York is in shambles, so they should really just be worrying about where they're going to live right now and not worry about everybody else's money.
Where's the outcry, Barbara, in Long Island, New York, and so on, you know, about FEMA? And, you know, where's that outcry that there was when Bush, you know, and Katrina and so on?
Oh, you know what? It's
localized.
It's just local because I just recently got Newsday on Twitter, so I started following them. So I was getting some of the tapes that they have, and they had a light. But my brother's still out of power. Thank God he's got my other brother to stay with. But they've been having protests about LIPA and how they suck. FEMA, they really just need to organize. I don't know what is wrong with these people. Part of me wants to go up there and say, I'll do it myself. Get out of my way.
That sounds like you, Barbara.
Yeah, I want to organize
get,
it, you know?
Get the hell out of my way.
Yes,
and let's get this done.
You know what? Back out. Hey, Barbara, how are the churches doing up there? I mean, are they helping out?
Yeah, the churches
are. Best they can.
The best they can, when the ones that haven't been destroyed. I know that the fire departments are taking stuff, and there's a lot of some of the businesses are also taking stuff, and they're giving free meals, hot meals. My brother's been posting on Facebook where they're giving hot meals and who's got what. I have my pile of stuff here that's going Wednesday up to New York. And, you know, they're making ends meet, you know, they're doing what they can. The problem up there is there was lack of work to begin with, and then this, and then the snowstorm after it, and there's just, they're crying out there, and yeah, where is the outrage? That's a good question. Oh, because it's a Democratic black president? Fuck that.
Well, the outrage to me is I was sitting there going, I can't believe this. You know, when we used to have hurricanes and so on in Florida, we had crews coming in from Georgia, from South Carolina, from North Carolina, even for all the way up in New York. We didn't ask. We didn't say, hey, you know, you ain't got no union card over here. What's up with that? You know, you got
that
no.
That was in Jersey.
In Jersey, whatever. You know what I'm saying? You know, but but I'm saying it's the mentality is that we didn't even ask that. We didn't say that. We didn't look at that. In Florida, I tell you what, Jeb Bush, when I was over there, and a couple other governors before him, had their stuff together. We knew what would happen in the hurricane, and we knew how to mobilize, and we knew how to get coordinated with FEMA. In Louisiana, they did it. and they blame the government. See, there's different metropolitan areas of the country, and when we had the flood up here in Tennessee, now I don't know if you've seen that in the news. I mean, you know, a few years ago, but I mean, Obama never came and then said, "Oh, well, I feel the pain."
Because he's a piece of crap. He's too busy photo-op.
No, because we're a red state.
See? Yes, I know.
He didn't come here. But the thing is that our people here in Nashville and our surrounding counties, we got together and we helped these other people out.
Yeah.
We got our chainsaws out. And what I'm trying to tell y'all is that when you see things like this going on, and there's people that are not really helping, that's because you're in a metropolitan area, and the metropolitan areas are mostly liberal.
Yeah.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. That's all I'm saying.
One of my friends posted on Facebook the other day that they called Pennsylvania Utility Company to let them know what their address was, because there's Pennsylvania trucks up on Long Island, to let them know where they were. So the Pennsylvania guy, utility company, went and got their power on that block. Can you believe it? They're calling other states to have their states come to Long Island to put their power on. Really?
Because there's no organization
there either.
And that must mean that they don't want them in the state. See, when you got the other workers that are all union, they're all unionized, and these, I don't know if Pennsylvania, if their electrical workers are unionized. I would imagine so, but it's probably not so hot and heavy as they are up there. But when you got these other guys coming in, they don't like it. They feel intimidated because the unions are for people that are mediocre at best, and that's I've said that for years, and I'll continue to say it. They're for mediocre people.
Hey, guys, I got to run and eat. My dinner's on the table. Love you guys, and I would absolutely love the idea of having another blog talk show that you guys do, because I love you guys. I love
your show. Barbara. And Barbara, hang on 2 minutes, Barbara, okay?
Okay.
Can you hang on, Barbara?
Yeah?
Barbara, have pork. We'll travel.
Yeah.
hang on 2 minutes, Barbara. I want to get Teresa on here, and then I just want to run through real quick, and I want 30 seconds from everybody on what we need to do next Sunday. So, Teresa, you, and then I want to run through everybody, and then we'll end the show.
Okay, just a couple closing comments. Number one, don't forget to pray for this country. God is still on our side.
Yeah.
We've got to remember to do that. We live in the constitutional representative republic. Our job is not over yet, so it isn't lost. A lot of this is going to go to the state level too, so that's where we're going to have to take up the fight, I think, is on the state level. And then, you know, just a thought about where the show went today. I think it probably went in the direction that it needed to go, because we're seeing the level of willful ignorance and spoiled stupid that's in this country right now. There's a big amount of re-educating these people. You know, and
thank
then
you,
the other thing about, you know, all paying their fair share or a fair minimum wage. If anybody in a restaurant or any other job that or a gas station, wherever, is making $20 an hour, then me as a customer isn't even going to go to a fast food restaurant ever again. So they're just going to, you know, employ themselves, you know, at a fair wage out of business. I mean, there's never they never look at that side of it. What are you going to do when a Happy Meal is, you know, $15? Nobody's going to buy it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you know what? Hang on 1 second, Teresa, because I want a 30-second closing remark from you. I'm going to start with Rick. Boyd, you're on deck. Rick, I want 30 seconds.
I mean, I just think the only way for us to go is ahead and you know, just limit the liberal callers for one and for two. You know, also just try and keep on the lookout for some gloaters in the chat room.
All right, brother, I appreciate it. And we never get the liberal callers, so today was kind of interesting. Boyd, 30 seconds, brother.
Hey, bro, you know what? For next week's show, Or one of the future shows. Try and snag Bill Whittle. If you've seen his last YouTube video, I think the band's on to something.
My show, I'll call you back.
Yeah, we're always trying to snag people, man.
We'll try and snag Bill for an hour or so.
Did you get that name, Brother Bring?
Yeah, Bill Will. Yeah, he's not on Trad-Am, I don't think, but yeah, we got videos in. I want to get Wild Bill for America over there. That's who I
want. Oh, yeah.
Start planting next Sunday.
Yeah, let's start planting the seed here because
Ron, and then Barbara. Ron, you're up. Barbara, you're on deck for a final 30 seconds.
I'm not going to take 30 seconds. I just want to say I do appreciate all y'all, even though I do tease a little bit strong sometimes. But we are all looking for the answers, and we need to sure focus and find them because we don't have much time. Mm-hmm. Y'all have a good one.
You too,
thank
Ron.
You, Ron. Barbara, 30 seconds, sweetheart.
All right. I think we got a bunch of ideas going on. I think we all need to present them and come together. We're on a lot of places that do are doing plan, making plans. And if everybody does a list and presents them for a solution, for us to go live in a solution and start living it and doing it, then we're not going to have such big problems anymore. I think, my opinion, but my opinion's like everyone else's. Everybody has one and they all stink. So,
except for here on Conservative Nation radio shows, I value them all. And that's how Bing and I will figure out how we're going to do next week's show. Thank you so much, Barbara. Teresa, final 30 seconds and then Bing, you're up.
I just after seeing this last week of numbers of companies on, laying people off, it's over Obamacare, and they're making a preemptive move to, recover their losses before it happens. So I think the number one enemy in this country right now, which can be dealt with at a state level, is, don't let your state get a health care exchange to implement Obamacare. Work at the state level to take that and at least take some part of this back. I think that's what we really need to do on the state level is, don't buy into this Obamacare. States are still sovereign.
Absolutely. Sovereignty's best.
Yep.
Thanks a lot, Mother Teresa. I appreciate it. You know I love you, buddy.
Thank you.
Bing, final thoughts, so we're going to do our outgoing show, and then I'll get with you probably tomorrow. Whatnot. Everybody that's still on here, guys, next Sunday we're going to do a show. I would like, and I'm asking for all of you all, Rick, Boyd, Ron, Barbara, Teresa, Kurt, who's already disconnected, let's get a show on next Sunday where we actually do start planning how we move forward. Bing, go ahead, brother.
Well, yeah, I want to say, too, share it with all your people. We need to get a show link out a little bit sooner than Michael, but, that's both of our fault there. But I've got a couple of people I want to get on the show. Maybe, I don't know about next week, but we'll see. But I think that the answer to the whole question here, the crux of the biscuit, is that the state House of Representatives control the purse strings. So if you cut off the money for funding for Obamacare, it won't happen. If we can reach them, and the governors too, because they're involved. The governors have a lot more power than a lot of people realize. If we can reach them, and we can get to them, and we can turn them around, I think we got this beat. That's my idea. I mean, as far as the show today, I mean, not the direction I wanted to. It to go, but hey, I learned some stuff. I learned, I guess.
I love you, my brother. I love you.
I love you too, brother.
All right, man. Well, look, it was an odd show today. We had an odd caller. I started off on an odd rant, just throwing some stuff out there. We got a lot to talk about, guys. I look forward to next Sunday. All of you, I'm asking all of you, please. I want you to think this week about what we can think about, like Chuck said, earlier in the show. Chuck's not with us, and I want to get with Chuck. I want his input, too. Let's think about a genuine show that's forward-looking and not backward-looking. I want to thank you all for joining us today. Just for the sake of the archive, we're going to end the show today with Madison's Rising.